My new book, Facts That Aren't True, is out now. Don't forget about my other book, Rational Answers to Stupid Questions. What evidence do you have that the universe was created billions of light years across 6,000 years ago?
The Bible.
That's what you call evidence. What does this thing about sound waves have to do with the universe being billions of light years across?
It has to do with him creating it. The Bible says that it, by the word of his testimony, by his word, he made stuff.
Did God use the laws of physics to create the universe?
I wasn't there.
In the future.
Well, what is your position? What did the universe come from?
I've told you so many times, I don't know.
Okay,
and
so you don't know what happened.
Problem
well,
with an eternal universe.
If you don't know that it didn't come from nothing, how can you say that I'm wrong?
You're putting words in my mouth, Brian.
Why should I stop saying it then, if you can't prove me wrong?
Why should you stop lying about what I believe?
Okay, well, thank you so much, Donnie, and thank you for Eric for this making this all happen. I'm pretty excited about this, and thank you, everybody, for tuning in on a Saturday night. I will do what I can to make it worth your while, and this may be one of the most important talks that you listen to, because if we have the wrong perspective of the past, we're going to have the wrong perception of the present and the wrong focus on the future, and the results could be devastating to everyone. And I think that we could all agree that the proper perspective would be based on facts and logic and not on errors and imagination. And the perspective of the past will help us answer these questions. You know, who am I? What am I worth? Why am I here? Where do I go when I die? These are so important because beliefs have consequences. And this is Jeffrey Dahmer. He is a guy who killed people and ate them. He said, if a person doesn't think there's a God to be accountable to, then what's the point of trying to modify your behavior to keep it within acceptable ranges? That's how I thought anyway. I always believed the theory of evolution is true, that we all just came from the slime. When we die, you know, that was it. There's nothing. And you might say, well, that's just one guy. What a nut, you know? But what if a whole culture follows that path and actually believed what Darwin said? At some future period, not very distant, as measured at by centuries, the civilized races of man will almost certainly exterminate and replace the savage races throughout the world. The break between man and his nearest allies will then be wider, for it will intervene between man and in a more civilized state, as we may hope, even than the Caucasians, because the white people were on top back then, and some ape as low as a baboon, instead of now between the Negro or Australian and the gorilla. So if they wanted to widen that gap and get rid of those Negroes and Australians. And so that's what he said. And he thought, well, that's just one guy. Well, what if that idea starts to snowball? This is 1870. The war of annihilation is a natural law without which the organic world could not continue to exist at all. In 1875, just as in nature, the struggle for existence is the moving principle of evolution and perfection, so also is the world history of the destruction of the weaker nations through the stronger is a postulate of progress. And these are German ethnologists and biologists. And then this guy in 1893, according to Darwin's theory, wars have always been the greatest importance for the general progress of the human species. The physically weaker, the less intelligent, the morally lower must give place to the stronger. So guess who swallowed this hook, line, and sinker? Hitler. Yeah, the law of selection exists in the world, and the stronger and healthier has received from nature the right to live. Woe to anyone who is weak, who does not stand his ground. He may not expect any help from anyone. Okay, and to be fair, you know, people who called themselves Christians did some abominable things in the past too, and I condemn both of them. I don't have much tolerance for people who don't have tolerance, I guess. That's kind of odd. But, you know, when you force your ideas on people, like in Germany, if you spoke out against it, you went into the concentration camp. Or if you speak out of something else, you know, you get, I hate the censorship. I think we should just have a free flow of ideas. But that's not happening in academia today. You know, in academia, if you don't go along with their perspective of the miracles, then you're going to be out, you're going to not be able to play the game. And so what are the miracles? Matter from nothing, which violates the first law of thermodynamics. Order from chaos violates the second law. Life from non-life violates the law of biogenesis. Immaterial ideas from matter, that's Einstein's gulf. He said that was a gulf that's unbridgeable. and consciousness from matter. And I'll predict that Eric will not explain how consciousness came from matter tonight. In 20 years, I've never seen anybody attempt it, but maybe he will. I would like to see that. And here's some timelines for the miracles. Okay, the blind chance timeline. You know, there's people that believe that the Big Bang, you know, that the universe got here by chance, and there's people that believe that humans got here by chance. And so that I just group them together. Big Bang, the Big Bangers and evolutionists are blind chancers. Okay, so 13 billion years ago, the first law was violated when matter was made. And then over the billions of years, the second law was violated when it got more complex and turned into this beautiful environment that we can live in on the Earth. And then 3 billion years ago, there was the first life violating the law of biogenesis, where the single living cell turned into everything that has ever lived. And then here we are today. Okay, and another viewpoint is a creation timeline. There's only two options. Either it was designed or it wasn't. So this is a dichotomy. So if there is information against one, that's information for the other one. And here's the timeline for the creation timeline. It's not too big compared to billions. So let's just spread it out. You know, 6,000 years ago, that's when all the miracles happened. God created the matter, the sun, moon, stars. He created life, the animals, the birds, the people. And we've got a universe that's winding down. We've got DNA that's getting worse. And who did that? Well, I would submit to you that it was God. Then roughly 4,400 years ago, there was a big flood. That's where we get our sedimentary rock and our fossils. And then Jesus came 2,000 years ago. And it's BC. I know they're changing it to BCE before Common Era, but it doesn't matter what you call it. It points to Jesus. And then people got on the scene here at the end of the timeline there and at the beginning of the other one. And people ask me, well, what do I think? I say, well, I just agree with Jesus. He was a young earth creationist. He was. You know, in Mark 10:6, he says, but from the beginning, not the end, the beginning of the creation. So he's a creationist. And young earth, beginning of the creation, God made them male and female. So Adam and Eve are there, not millions of years, not billions of years, but right there at the beginning. Okay, and let's define some terms here. Using the scientific method, the National Academy of Sciences defines science as the use of evidence to construct testable explanations and predictions of the natural phenomena, as well as the knowledge of generated through this process. Okay, so science is testable. That's what it says. It's testable. So if it's not testable, it's not science, according to the National Academy of Sciences. And that's what they're teaching in my town, so that's what I'm going with. That's what my textbook's buying. So I'm going with it. And then evolution. I'm not talking about big beaks or little beaks or even changes within a gene. I'm talking about the big evolution, molecules to man evolution, amoeba to elephant. You know, and this says all life on Earth is related to a common ancestor that existed about 3.8 billion years ago. This process is called evolution. Okay, and this process is also called not science. This is not testable. You can't do any of this in a lab. This is a belief system about the past, and that's what we're talking about tonight. It's belief systems of the past. One's based on a creator and one's not. So this is not science versus religion. No, it's science based on one view of history that acknowledges God versus science based on another view of history that doesn't acknowledge God. And I'll just leave you with this.
Ken Miller, Brown University, once said that intelligent design is a science stopper. In other words, they believe that intelligent design is something like this. It's a science stopper. But in the last video, we saw how, in the case of junk DNA, it was actually evolution that was stopping science and discouraging research. Intelligent design, on the other hand, not only encouraged research, but made predictions that turned out to be correct. According to evolutionary theory, all living things are descended from a single common ancestor. This means that at one point, all living things trace back to the exact same DNA. Under this theory, the differences between species today only exist because of mutations that have built up in the gene pools over time. There's a problem, though. Mutations are dangerous. Changing any part of a functional genome is far more likely to harm or kill an organism than it is to help it. Kind of like driving a car down the road. If you're currently using the tires, it's hard to change them. But if the mutated genes are non-functional, if they're not currently in use, maybe like a spare tire, they could be tinkered with more safely. So the argument goes like this. You and this mouse are different because of accumulated mutations. Those mutations will most easily accumulate in non-functional regions. So evolution predicts that these different regions must be junk DNA. A 2014 paper used this reasoning to claim that only 8.2% of human DNA is functional, because that's the amount of DNA that's similar between humans and other mammals. But do you see the problem? If only the common bits of DNA are functional, why would a mouse be a mouse and not you? So some of this junk DNA has to be functional, torpedoing their entire logic. And on top of that, the first point in this argument, we're different only because of accumulated mutations, is an assumption. Scientists don't know that all genetic differences come from mutations. They assume that at the outset because their evolutionary viewpoint tells them to. But what if, and I know this might sound crazy, but hear me out, what if the differences in DNA are what help make us different from mice? Intelligent design not only predicts that this different DNA is likely functional, it predicts that this different DNA might be what encodes the differences between species. And as we learn more about junk DNA, this indeed seems to be the case. This elegantly explains the reason for many similarities and differences in DNA between different species. The similarities reflect basic proteins that are needed in different types of species, and the differences in DNA control the unique things about an organism. In biology, similarities between species are important, but it's the differences that make the difference. By assuming that much of the DNA that's different between species was junk, evolutionists missed out on crucial scientific data. Others rely on a junk of the gaps argument, claiming that until we find function in a gene, we should assume it's junk. But this argument is defeated by the trend line of the data. We're finding function practically everywhere we look. He too understood that you can tell a lot about a theory by the predictions it makes. He said this: if the human genome is indeed devoid of junk DNA, as implied by the ENCODE project, then a long,
sorry for not getting back to your email. I saw your email, bro. I've been so freaking ridiculously swamped. We gotta hit it up sometime in the stream or something.
All DNA, as much as possible, is expected to exhibit function. If ENCODE is right, then evolution is wrong. In regard to DNA,
in your last minute, did you want to pause the video and summarize?
Nothing
because
there.
I think we're going on a for opening statements, we don't mind a couple minutes of a video, but yeah.
Okay.
If you wanted to summarize, you got one minute.
Basically, the evolutionists, they did not allow for the junk and they were wrong. And the creationists did allow for it and they were right. And so I apologize for going after my stopwatch went dark on me. Sorry about that. And so, yeah, basically it makes accurate predictions, and the evolutionists were wrong with their predictions. They called it junk when it wasn't.
Okay, Brian, thank you very much for that roughly 12-minute opening statement to anybody just joining us in the live chat. We are doing this live. We will be doing an audience Q&A period. So please make sure to send in those questions. We'll have some fun engaging them. Planet Peterson, the floor is yours. You also have 12 minutes. Go ahead.
Thank you very much. Let me share my slide tab. Should be available there. Okay.
Yeah.
That looks like everybody can read that. Okay. So, all right, here we go. Tonight, I don't think it's really a debate about any particular subject or anything like that, although we're going to use subjects, like we're going to have to talk about different fields of science, but because the topic is the proper framework or the proper perspective, rather, to me, I kind of think of this as this is a debate on how to think. Now, Brian has a presentation on his YouTube channel, and it's titled the exact same thing as tonight's debate. And I studied that, and I just thought it was just some of the laziest, dishonest, and embarrassing stuff I've seen in a long time, not to mention that it's self-defeating. Brian does the equivalent of giving a speech declaring that he believes in square circles, and I'll get to that eventually. So these are screenshots from the presentation that Brian used, and a lot of it's similar to the stuff you just saw. So he begins at the outset by calling it, you know, science based, or by comparing science based on one view, a view of God, Whereas a view, the other view is there's no God. So you can see the unironic straw man here in the bottom right, blind chance and random collisions. That's the poisoning of the well and the straw man for the alternative position. Remember this because we come back to it kind of toward the end. So this timeline, we saw this in Brian's opening as well. What evidence was discussed? Absolutely none at all. It's just a timeline, and one has big numbers, one has smaller numbers. What is this supposed to convince anybody of? Well, we don't know because no explanation, no model, no data, no nothing was given. This whopper of a slide that Brian shows, he has all these different fields of science and gives just utterly meaningless takes on all of them. What does Brian tell us about astronomy? God created it. That's virtually it. No evidence, no explanation, no model, no data. In the field of biology, Brian says there are variations, but there are limits. No explanation of what the limits are or why those limits, why we have those limits. And again, precisely what they are. Brian presents zero evidence of his worldview and zero explanation of why evolution over time cannot produce extreme changes. Dinosaurs. He says there were baby dinosaurs on the ark, and then people called them dragons and slayed them. So ignoring the childish lunacy of believing in dragons, baby dinosaurs. Did Brian produce any evidence? Of course not. He spent about 5 seconds giving his explanation and then moved on. And that's because there is no evidence in this worldview. Geology. Brian says, like two times, a flood happened. The entire field of geology can be reduced to there was a flood in this worldview. Does this sound recent or rational or anything? And the fact that we are skipping through multiple fields of science by just saying nuh-uh and God did it just shows how utterly unserious this all is. Anthropology, Brian says Tower of Babel, and that's it. Like the fact that you can so lazily reduce an entire field of science and then just describe a story that didn't happen and could not possibly have happened by just saying Tower of Babel, again, just the unseriousness of all of this. Brian says there are no transitional fossils of anything. Brian, what on earth are all of these things? Transitional fossils are very well understood by evolutionary biologists. I don't know why you would say this unless you just don't know that the evidence exists, or you just hand wave away the evidence in laziness. Another thing Brian says, trying to debunk geology and the claim that Earth is very old. Granite can't form from magma because the minerals are of different densities. Granite comes in a range of densities. A simple Google search would have told you that, as do the primary minerals, silica, feldspar, and quartz, feldspar, and biotite that make up granite. Those come in a variety of densities too. So the idea that I don't know how you come up with this unless you're just literally not trying and you're searching for the most microscopic thing to try to make a cheap talking point. But this, the way that you attempt to debunk mainstream science by just making a statement, oh, the minerals are different densities, therefore it just could not have happened. The end. No explanation of anything. No real rigorous attempt at debunking, and certainly no presentation of data that supports a particular view. Plate tectonics. I don't have a picture of it, but Brian holds up this book. It says 20 reasons to question plate tectonics or something to that effect. And all he says is, plate tectonics? Well, there's this book. Plate tectonics doesn't work. That's legitimately the only thing he says. It doesn't work. We have clear, demonstrable evidence of plate tectonics. You can look at the ages of the oceanic crust. You can look at the locations of deep focus earthquakes and multiple other things as well. Orogenies across the planet, the distribution of fossils across the planet. I just don't understand how you can make these claims. I didn't have to do anything to rebut Brian's speech other than remember the material that I taught in high schools for 10 years. The alternative that we're being sold here from Brian, the comprehension of of this alternative doesn't go to an American high school level. I didn't have to do anything special. And then as if the incompetence wasn't enough, I don't know if Brian's a liar or what the deal with this is, but we saw this in his opening too. He brings up On the Origin of Species. So Brian takes this 19th century English and tells the entire audience, hey, see, this book was about one race being better than the other. On the Origin of Species famously skips over the question of human evolution. It's about other organisms. Races was the way people in the 1800s would describe what we call species. There's nothing about human evolution in this book, and it's not a book about racism. And then he goes on, we saw this quote in his opening as well. This quote from Darwin is very often used and misused, because what Brian is trying to do by lying to you is telling you, implying that Darwin desired or was calling for what you see written here to happen. That's not what this is. You can read it for yourself and see this is Darwin simply proclaiming what he thinks will happen. Now, I don't know. Maybe it's just laziness. Maybe Brian didn't do the 5 seconds it takes to look into what favored races means, or do the 5 seconds of thinking it takes to understand that Darwin's statement was a prediction, not an endorsement. But in either case, it's either the lying or the laziness, and none of it bodes well. And again, it's clear that this is just such an unserious presentation. Couple more things. So this is by far the worst aspect of all of this. So Brian shows this slide again, and he says, well, which view should we go with? According to Brian, you can see the transcript in the video from him talking. He says we should throw away the one that violates the laws of physics. Brian, I don't know how you do it. I don't know how you get up every day and say you're teaching creation science while also proclaiming that if an explanation requires miracles, then it's not science. I cannot wrap my head around this. You openly believe in a contradiction. Creation science is not science by your own admission. The explanation that requires us to insert magic, which is an unknown process, to make the description of a process complete, makes an insane and asinine logical leap that the secular model does not. There are things we don't know, and we have tentative explanations that we are working on testing, but nothing in my worldview, which I think is the proper perspective, isn't scientific or a contradiction like this just blatantly is. Everything in Brian's worldview is unscientific and a contradiction. And then the Big Bang. So just more complete incompetency or poisoning the well. So like if I said, because we can see here, the Big Bang is nothing plus nothing equals explosion. If I sat up tonight, I will not do this. I will not sit up here and say, well, you know, Brian's worldview is wrong because Santa Claus and the Tooth Fairy don't exist. That's a straw man, and it's intellectually dishonest. Nobody except creationists thinks that the Big Bang is when nothing turned into something. This is the most commonly regurgitated idiotic trope about the Big Bang, meaning it's the most commonly debunked talking point. And yet here Brian is saying it. This proves either you can't think, you won't think, or you're lying. Because there's no possibility that you'd say something like this if you had just looked into it for even one moment. Because it's just utterly humiliating to sound so dumb in front of a group of people. And nobody would do that to themselves unless they were just lying or, again, didn't spend even 5 seconds looking into it or thinking about it. Another thing, he tries to debunk star formation by appealing to Boyle's Law. Boyle's Law only applies when temperatures remain constant. This is one of the three ideal gas laws. So, Brian, do you know about hydrostatic equilibrium? Do you know about genes instability? Do you know about radiative cooling? And these are rhetorical questions, of course, because it's my opening statement, and we've already seen how utterly clueless, unread, unlearned, deceptive, and incompetent Brian tends to be. But what to sit here and say, oh, using 10th grade chemistry to debunk astronomy, this is exactly the same kind of thing that happens when a flat earther says they proved the earth is flat with a Nikon P900. It's just utterly lacking and unserious. And the very final thing is, Brian likes to point out that there are unknowns in science. So we should throw out an entire field that Brian disagrees with, which unfortunately is many fields. Geology, astronomy, evolution, well, just biology in general, I suppose. So, Brian, if this is the case, how did God do, if you don't like this somehow thing, how did God do anything, literally anything at all? So I promise that Brian will not give any answer to that question that we are going to see tonight. So stay tuned.
Okay, that is 12 minutes and 12 minutes each for our opening statements for tonight. A lot of passion and energy so far in just the openers. But we've got 8-minute rebuttals. And so these are 8-minute periods to engage each other's arguments and defend our positions. And so, Brian, I will reset the timer and start it again on your first word. You got 8 minutes. Go ahead.
Okay. I'm still working on the screen share real quickly. Okay. I think I got it. Sorry about this.
No problem. As you're doing that to the audience, I will remind you all that we will be having an audience Q&A once we're done with the closing statements for tonight. So please, if you have a question or a challenge, maybe you hear something Brian says or something Eric says and you disagree with it and you want to challenge it, just make sure to send that in with a question mark at the end and we'll interact with those comments. Brian, your slide is up.
Yeah, well, thank you. Yeah, and I wasn't talking about the origin of species. I was talking about the descent of man. That's where he said it. And I said it in my other talk that Eric had looked at, but I didn't have time to say that during the opening. And so, yeah, this is from the descent of man, not the origin of species. And as far as the granite, this is from Dr. Walt Brown. He's got a PhD from MIT. And he says that had Earth ever been molten, its dense radioactive chemical elements such as gold would have sunk into Earth's core. Gold is 70% denser than lead, yet it is found at the Earth's surface. And he said, if it melted granite slowly cooled, the first mineral to solidify would sink to the bottom of the melt if it were denser than the melt, or it would float to the top of the melt if it were less dense than the melt. A layer cake of minerals would form instead of granite, which is a granular mixture of minerals. Therefore, the entire Earth was never molten. And let's see here. Let me go down to... Oh, wait a minute. But then, Doug, there's Richard Gentry. He also found polonium halos inside of granite. And it's got a 3-minute half-life. And if that was the case, it said it's like finding bubbles inside of the... Alka-Seltzer bubbles inside of ice. It had to form quickly. And he has a challenge out there. Prove him wrong by making granite. Okay, and then what else did Eric talk about? The origin of life is a huge showstopper. And I'm not a scientist, but I'll show you what scientists are saying about the things that I brought up. The origin of life is not happening.
All of these little pictures of molecules coming together to form the first cell are fallacious, are ridiculous. The origin of life community has not been honest. They will write in their very papers, they will see some small phenomena and extrapolate what this means in the context of origin of life. And then they will work with the press, and the press will extrapolate it all the more. And you get many, many people deceived. All of this is lies. This is a lie.
Scientist Craig Venter creates life for the first time in a laboratory.
We're here today to announce the first synthetic cell.
We haven't created life nowhere close. What they did is they took a cell. They took the genome out of that cell. They manufactured a genome that's similar to it, and they put it in. That is akin to taking an engine out of a Ford and putting it in to a Buick and then saying, look, I created automobiles.
Okay. Yeah. So again, those are scientists. It's not, and it's not, and they do the proto cell, and that can't happen either.
I can mix.
And, and let's just jump to the he talks about the Big Bang, and there's a lot of energy in the Big Bang, but energy destroys things. Oh, and he talked about the species, that they're not sudden appearance, that everything's gradual. Well, take a listen to this guy.
The phenomenon of sudden appearances in the fossil record is not just an exceptional case, but actually it's a pattern that is found everywhere. The origin of life, the origin of photosynthesis, the Avalon explosion, the great Ordovician biodiversification event, the Siluro-Devonian terrestrial revolution, the Devonian-Necton revolution, and the Odontode revolution, the Carboniferous insect explosion, the Triassic explosion, the origin of flowering plants, the origin of butterflies, the neo-avian revolution of modern birds, the placental mammal radiation, the origin of the genus Homo, and finally, the upper Paleolithic human revolution.
Yeah, so there's a lot of things that burst on the scene, and he's not the only one saying it. And
Now that is a serious list of big jumps in the fossil record.
If you look at the technical literature, we can see references to a fish explosion, a bird explosion, a dinosaur explosion, a mammal explosion, and even the origin of our own genus Homo has been referred to as a Big Bang theory of human evolution, because we see throughout the fossil record different types of organisms appearing abruptly without this gradual change that Darwin's theory predicted.
Anthropologist Jeffrey Schwartz, who supports evolution, is blunt. Most major groups of organisms, he says, appear in the fossil record full-blown and raring to go, in contradiction to Darwin's depiction of evolution.
Yeah, so there's some big problems with what Erica said. There's transitional, these things burst on the scene like crazy. And let's just go with the Big Bang. How are we going to get life on Earth? You need certain elements here.
It's true, the universe has plenty of raw energy out there, but there's a very important difference between that and what life can actually use to exist. Life is pretty picky. It needs very specific kinds of energy, and it needs to be fed it in a very particular kind of way. Otherwise, it's kind of like trying to charge your cell phone with a charcoal grill. There's lots of energy in the grill, but none of it is usable for your poor, dying phone. To harness the raw energy of the grill into something your phone can use, you would need a set of pretty complex machines. A boiler to heat water into steam, a turbine that the steam pressure can spin, an electric generator, then transformers, converters, regulators to get the energy in just the right form. And then you need the right kind of charger plug thing for your phone. And if you're lucky, the cable's long enough so that you can lay in bed while it charges. And now that's a weird angle. But like life, your cell phone isn't just picky, it's also fragile. Not only will the grill not charge your cell phone, but it'll also destroy it. If the little circuits and bits in your cell phone get too much energy, or even a little bit of the wrong kind of energy, it's done for. Ooh, battery's almost dead. Let's get you some energy. 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 Raw forms of energy can only be used for life if complex machines are available to harness them. And the wrong kind of energy will destroy life.
All right. And so, I cover a lot of stuff very quickly because it's very short. You know, I hit the topics very, it's a short talk, so I can't go into depth on a lot of those. And so the Big Bang, yeah, where does that come from? And the energy, how does that begin life? And so what we're trying to do tonight is give the proper perspective of the past, and one's based on blind chance and random collisions of atoms, and the other one is based on a designer or a creator. And we can look at the pros and cons of each, and I'm thankful that Eric is here to give us his insights. It's very interesting to see that there's a lot of rescuing devices out there for the blind chance perspective. And I think that, that's about it. We'll just end it there.
Brian, thank you very much. That was roughly 8 minutes. And that's what we have on the clock for our rebuttals is 8 minutes. And so I will reset the timer, and Planet Peterson, whenever you're ready, just let me know. We'll start it up again. You got 8 minutes. Go ahead.
You can start it right now. So I just jotted notes while Brian was giving his opening and a couple of things during his rebuttal. That will be my rebuttal. So he did the whole thing where I pointed this out, but in that presentation on his YouTube channel, he talks about Darwin and On the Origin of Species and The Descent of Man. And I think this is a sly and sleazy attempt to poison the well by saying like, oh, well, if you believe in evolution, then you're worshiping or you're following or whatever the racism or something like that. And then he says all this stuff about the secularists, the evolutionists are trying to like get rid of Christianity or something, as if Christianity hasn't engaged in cultural erasure and cultural supremacy. I mean, just the deliberate wiping out of peoples in the New World. Yes, most of them died because of diseases and that couldn't be prevented, but they just outright declared for the glory of God, we are going to enslave and kill these people. Since Brian likes quotes, Brian, do you like this quote? Slavery was established by decree of Almighty God. It is sanctioned in the Bible, in both Testaments, from Genesis to Revelation. It has existed in all ages, has been found among the people of the highest civilization, and in nations of the highest proficiency in the arts. That's Jefferson Davis. That was his U.S. Senate speech in 1860. So, am I going to sit up here and say Christianity is the endorsement of slavery? No. He also brought up Hitler. Like, it's Godwin's law. How long does it take until Hitler gets brought up? Apparently, it's like the second thing that Brian said. So, but I don't know if, Brian, you're unaware, but Nazi Germany, they had an explicit policy of positive Christianity that they endorsed. So, you know, anybody can try to taint the narrative this way. But Brian did acknowledge that people who happen to be Christians have done bad things over time. Nice. So once again, Brian brings up scientific miracles. All of this is violated by Brian's worldview. He believes in a God that is a miracle worker. Brian's not going to give any account of how anything God did happened. This is why I said Brian believes in the equivalent of square circles. Creation science is an oxymoron. It's unscientific. And I'm pretty sure Brian uses miracle as a pejorative. Okay, your worldview is full of pejoratives then, Brian. I don't know why you do this then. I don't remember if this was from that stupid cartoon or what, but I wrote down a quote. Either it was designed or it wasn't. Oh no, this is Brian just showing us his timeline. So how does your timeline of 14 billion versus 6,000 years point to creation versus non-creation? It doesn't. There's no logical problem with saying, oh, we're created? Well, then we were created billions of years ago. And you could say it was by aliens, you could say it was by Yahweh, or you could just say we live in a simulation. Appealing to creation doesn't open the door to anything in particular, and it doesn't close any doors. And we can see that because there's no explanation of any data or how any of that data should be interpreted. Brian's just saying things. So, in other words, it's epistemologically useless. Brian provides a definition of science. He says if it's not testable, it's not science. So, Brian, I would love to hear, maybe we can do this in open discussion, provide a single scientific test of any biblical claim. And you won't be able to do that, so I hope you abandon creation science, but we all know you won't. Brian, he really went after evolution for not being science because evolution is a study of the past. It's not observable, testable, and repeatable. This, again, just a completely ridiculous talking point. If something in the past happened, then there is predictable evidence that in principle you could find. So that is scientific. That's how archaeology, that's how forensics, that's how astronomy works. Because we observe things that are very distant, we're observing them as they were in the past. Thank you to Albert Einstein for that insight. Evolution predicted the genetic structure that we see. It predicted the fossil record, and those predictions have come true. Countless times. Sorry, I had a hiccup there. We observe similarities in organisms. We test our hypothesis that they're related by looking for transitional forms or by studying DNA, for example. We find those predictions over and over and over again, observable, testable, repeatable. Neil Shubin predicted there should be a tetrapodomorph transitional form in rocks of this age in this location. And then he went to the islands in Canada, Nunavut or wherever that is, and he found exactly what he was looking for. But that's just one example. But it's an extreme example because of how unbelievably precise it is and how it relies on huge numbers of other fields of science that are all telling us the same thing. A very old Earth that's gone through very different epochs and environments that have changed and life that has changed. If those things are all false, they can't correlate. You can't get these predictions coming out of them like that. The whole thing would fall apart. Oh, what else? The cartoon that he played in the kind of the during his rebuttal, I mean, that was just completely and utterly ridiculous. It didn't describe anything that precludes evolutionary science. It just said stuff like DNA. Is there junk DNA? Well, not really. And evolution? Well, nuh-uh. I mean, like, if Brian thinks that that video had anything to say, then I welcome with open arms any challenge that Brian can repeat from that video to me during cross-examination. We saw Gunter Betchley. I don't know how to say his name. Sorry. He just listed a whole bunch of words and gave zero explanation or evidence of anything. Cambrian explosion, Ordovician, the Silurian, the what's it called? The Ediacaran, just buzzwords with absolutely no substance behind them. That Gunter guy should be a politician. He'd be great at it. All words and no substance. So, and then there were a bunch of other people, but literally all of them are appealing to the secular account of the data. They point to all these eras in the fossil record, and then they just say, yeah, given what the secular science says, the secular science is wrong. Like, it's just, it's so ridiculous. I'm running out of time, but the stuff with the transitional fossils, what the hell does it mean to appear abruptly? A fossil doesn't appear abruptly. It exists. We find them in the ground, and they have diagnosable anatomical features that allows us to place them into clades or phylogenies. And the last thing that I wrote down was this quote, this is from Brian, let's go with the Big Bang. How did we get life on Earth? Complete non sequitur. And then he shows that cartoon again, and the cartoon says life needs particular specific energy to exist. This is absolutely false. Life on Earth exists at the bottom of the ocean near hydrothermal vents and does chemosynthesis, which is radically different than photosynthesis in so many ways. And then the thing about life being fragile, I agree. Everything that's ever existed has died. So what kind of incompetent, sadistic creator would create a world and universe full of death? There's a good question. So anyways, that is all I had.
Eric, that is your 8-minute rebuttal. And gentlemen, we've concluded our opening statements of 12 minutes and rebuttals of 8. We have plenty of points and arguments now on the table to engage for our cross-examination. Cross-exam, we have a total of 50 minutes broken up into 2 25-minute sections. Eric just ended with his rebuttal. Therefore, Brian, let's give you the floor for the first 25 minutes to lead the way in cross-exam and discussion. I'll start the timer on your first point or question. Go ahead.
Okay, I'm still getting the screen set up, and I'd like to thank Eric for his input. How are we doing there? Are we sharing the screen?
Yes, looks like it's up now.
We're sharing the screen. All right, well, let's start with Tiktaalik. He said they made accurate predictions. Well, when did Tiktaalik live? They lived 375 million years ago, so that's when they walked out of the sea. But then there's another one, four-legged creature forces evolution rethink. Remember that was 375 million? Well, this one is, let's see, this one is 397 million. So how do you get somebody making footprints when it's 20 million years earlier than when Tiktaalik was there? And the transition from our fishy ancestors to land creatures, which now was thought to have occurred 380 million years ago, okay, so millions of years earlier, had they earlier than had that been established. So it's talking about it being precise. Oh, wait a minute. I'm doing Q&A, right? I'm asking you questions. Sorry about that. Cross exam, yeah. Okay, sorry about that. Okay, Eric, do you have a spirit or are you just matter and energy?
Well, let's do this. I'm going to jump in real quick. Since we want to take it one topic or one point at a time, let's stick with the tectonic points.
Okay.
Eric, feel free to address that or engage the points Brian made. We'll go back and forth a little bit on that.
Okay.
Well, Brian, you just argued that there was a tetrapodomorph 380 million years ago in the past.
Well, that was tectonic when that was there, but they found footprints at 397 million, according to their timeline.
Okay, so you acknowledge that 397 million years ago, there were living organisms on the planet?
No, I'm acknowledging that there's problems with the dateline that you guys have. That tectonic wasn't there when it wasn't as precise as you made it out to be.
I don't understand. How are you saying that there was a fossil almost 400 million years ago, therefore the Earth is only 6,000 years old? How does that make any sense?
Well, you can ask me that during your Q&A.
Oh, yeah, okay. You're right. So I just would like to, my mistake
yeah.
on that.
Yeah, we'll get
that. I just think that that's a ridiculous hypocrisy to appeal to 400 million years to say that, like to appeal to the secular science as if it disproves itself is really silly to me.
Okay, Eric, do you have a spirit or are you just matter and energy?
I don't think I have a spirit. I think I have a conscience. I don't necessarily know if that consciousness or whatever is reducible merely to matter, but I suspect that it probably is.
Okay, where did people come from?
My parents had sex. That's where I came from.
And people in general, where did the humans come from?
Earth, Africa specifically.
But what? What was their ancestor? What did
Homo Heidelbergensis.
And where did Heidel come from?
Homo erectus.
And where did that come from?
I'm not 100% sure.
Okay.
I think it's probably known, but I don't know off the top of my head.
Okay. Well, so there's none. You don't. Okay. Let's jump to what did the first life come from?
Earth. Probably near hydrothermal vents. That's what I would guess.
And where did Earth come from?
Well, Earth exists in the universe. To say where is something in the universe doesn't really make any sense.
Where did it come from? Where did it come from? How did the Earth originate?
So the nebular hypothesis is pretty well tested. We actually have photos of protoplanetary disks.
What was the matter? Where did the matter for the Earth come from?
So instead of asking me, so you're arguing in bad faith because you didn't want to know where people came from. You're just trying to backtrack to why does the universe exist or where did it come from?
No, I don't want to misrepresent your position. I want to make sure I have it right. So where did the matter for the Earth come from?
It exists in the universe.
And where did it start?
The universe?
Yeah.
Where? To say where is the universe makes no sense.
Where did the matter from the universe come from?
We have no idea if it came from anywhere. To posit that the universe was created is an unfound.
What did the Big Bang make?
It didn't make anything. The Big Bang is a description of the universe. The universe is expanding. The Big Bang is not an account of where the universe came from. It's a description of what the universe does.
But where did the matter come from? Did the Big Bang make hydrogen and helium?
Hydrogen and helium came out as a consequence of the rapid expansion of the universe. But to say that it came from the Big Bang, again, is not an appropriate statement.
So do you believe that?
We don't know. Just real quick. The Big Bang doesn't tell us that the universe was created. We don't know if the universe is created. It may be eternal.
I'm asking about the matter. Do you think hydrogen and helium from the Big Bang turned into people?
That's really a kind of a ridiculous straw man. Like my cat eats cat food and that food, she digests it and it becomes part of her body because that's how organisms work. But to say my cat came from cat food is pretty silly. It's a weird kind of compositional fallacy. But I do believe in stellar nucleosynthesis. I don't know how somebody could doubt stellar nucleosynthesis.
Okay, so
it's well established.
Do you think we came from stardust? Do you think people?
I think
came
that's
from
where
stardust.
Elements heavier than hydrogen, for the most part, come from.
Okay,
is rigorously confirmed by the scientific method.
Okay. So what's the best scientific evidence that hydrogen and helium turn into people, or stardust turns into people? Is that your position? That
you're skipping an insane number of steps.
I want to make sure I got it right. Because they're stardust, therefore it turns into people. Is that your position?
Brian, this is such a ridiculous straw man. Have you ever written a book?
Okay, you're not going to answer that one. Okay,
no,
do you think this is accurate?
You can think it's unfair that I asked a question, but
is
like,
this a fact? Are we only 1.6% different from chimps?
Genetically, yes.
Yes. Is that a fact? Okay, which genome is bigger, the chimps or humans?
Which one is bigger? I don't know off the top of my head.
If one was 6% bigger, would that mean we're 1.6% different?
No, not necessarily. The way you compare genomes is really complicated.
Yeah, here, it's like this is how
a genetic paragraph, thousands of letters long, appears twice in a human scroll, but only once in its chimp counterpart. Should that second human copy count as thousands of changes or just one? And what about identical paragraphs that appear in both genomes, but in different places or in reverse order or broken up into pieces? Rather than monkey around with these difficult questions, the researchers simply excluded all the large mismatch sections, a whopping 1.3 billion letters in all, and performed a letter-by-letter comparison on the remaining 2.4 billion, which turned out to be 98.77% identical. So, yes, we share 99% of our DNA with chimps, if we ignore 18% of their genome and 25% of ours, we may not actually be 99%.
Okay, let's stop it there, Brian, and give Eric an opportunity to respond.
And at least
Eric,
a little bananas.
This is just a clarifying question. Was that from Minute Earth?
Yes, it was.
Okay, so we can't accuse Brian of using like creationist sources because Minute Earth is not that. I recognize the music and the voice.
Yeah.
So this is a complete non-starter because we're still more, even if you change the metrics, the measurements by determining how similar our genomes are, we're still more closely related to the chimps than anything else. The nested hierarchies of relatedness between organisms is conserved even when you change how you compare them, which is only evidence of evolution.
Okay, because to me it looks like they manipulated the data. They cut out 1.3 billion to get that number. Do you think Lucy walked upright?
Well, yeah, we know that.
Okay. Well, did you know that they cut her hip to turn it from a chimp into a human?
No, God, not
okay,
this.
Here we go.
The thing about Lucy being a chimpanzee, this is so ridiculous. There are
seem to flare out like a chimp's.
Is that
but
it?
All are not lost.
Okay.
So they cut it. They cut it to make Lucy's hip look like a human's instead of a chimp.
Lovejoy decided he could restore the pelvis to its natural shape.
I don't know
when
I'm supposed to say anything.
Let me.
Are you looking at
screen share, Brian, or just play the audio?
What's that?
Are you looking at screen share or just play the audio?
Am I not screen sharing?
No, I think you might have ended the screen share. But Eric, if you're familiar with that point, feel free to interact with it.
I don't remember the exact specifics of the hip, but the Lucy fossil, like when we find these fossils, they're broken into a lot of pieces and they get pieced together. And you can say that the paleontologists are incompetent, but I mean, whatever. But Lucy, it's not predicated just on the hip. There have been anatomical studies of Lucy's foramen magnum and of her femur. And we've compared the location of her foramen magnum versus humans, Homo sapiens, versus chimpanzees. And guess what? Lucy's is exactly in between us and them. Well, that's what you would expect in a transitional form. There are really specific details about the femur bone. There are particular grooves and notches that upright walking primates like us have that chimpanzees don't have because of how quadrupedal there are. And Lucy has what we have. So this, okay. you can claim conspiracy about the hip bone, but you're just completely ignoring all of the other evidence.
Yeah, there is. There's a whole bunch of fraud that Dr. Carl Werner has found, and he's found 150 cases of fraud in this book. And the Lucy's hip, but we'll move on. And also the knee was a fraud too. Okay, let's see.
The what was a fraud?
The knee. Okay, how about this? Do you think this is accurate representation? Embryology, that birds, bunnies, and people live, they've got the same, they look the same. Do you think that's a fact?
Yeah, we have gill arches early in our development, but we don't have gills as fully okay. formed adults.
Well, those drawings look real close to Haeckel's drawings, which were frauds 100 years ago. Do they look pretty similar? But then that's what they actually look like. Did you know that those were frauds, that they were frauds 100 years ago? Did you know that?
He was convicted of
fraud by his own university, and they're still in our textbooks. Are you okay with that?
Can I talk?
Yeah.
Haeckel was immediately dismissed by...
I know,
I can't remember what his name was, but by an evolutionary biologist.
Right, but should those pictures be in our textbooks?
Yeah, there's no problem with them, because if you go back, you have to be denying that we have gill arches early in development, which is just, I don't know why you would say that.
You think those things look the same?
Brian,
you think those are accurate?
Brian, you can see the gill arches on the human embryo in that
picture. I'm not talking about the gill arches.
Yes, we are, because that's what Haeckel's drawings depict.
No, Haeckel, look at the middle.
You have to take artistic license to make a representation of something, and his cartoons aren't photographs. Like, we get that. And he read into them what he wanted to see. What Haeckel specifically believed, which is stupid and false, is that we literally go through a reptilian stage. That's not true, but it is true that we do resemble other vertebrates early in development.
That's my question. Those images were different than what he drew, but let's move on. Do you think the eyes are wired backwards? Is this a fact? Their science hasn't been able to come up with a working hypothesis to why our retinas are set up backwards. Do you agree with that?
The photoreceptors are in the back of the retina, whereas mollusks, like squids.
I know that. Is there a reason that's wired backwards?
Yeah.
You think yes? So there's no reason for that, right? Is that what you're saying?
There are random quirks of biology, like our recurrent laryngeal nerve that goes down to the heart.
This is why it's the Smithsonian. Are you aware that the Smithsonian says this is why they're wired? It's no mistake, is what they say. The glial cells did indeed create columns of concentrated lights. And Medical Express says they're like fiber optic cables. And its optimization is just that color vision during the day is enhanced while nighttime vision suffers very little. So there's reasons for that. So do you think that this is accurate? They're ignoring those reasons. Do you think that's a good thing to do?
I don't know what you're accusing them of. That the eyes we have are capable of working is not an endorsement of creation.
They're not backwards. Okay, let's move on.
No, they literally are backwards compared to a mollusk. Retina, they have a compound eye, and their photoreceptors are on the inside of the retina.
I understand that, but there's reasons for it. It turns it into fiber optics. That's what it says.
Yeah, evolution selects that which is survival.
Evolution can select. Okay, so is it backwards or not?
Yes.
Okay, well then you deny the Smithsonian. Okay, do you think life can start in water?
Life can start in water? I don't know what you mean by that.
Okay, this is chemicals sloshing together. We're constantly bumping into each other and combining into new chemistry. Over millions of years, that process can lead to living organisms. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, we don't have any evidence that life was produced non-naturally on Earth.
Naturally on
Earth. You're muted, Brian.
Oh, Brian, I think you might have muted yourself when you clicked the audio on the video by accident. But if you go back to the StreamYard where you can see us, if you click the unmute, then we should be able to hear you again.
I can't even see that. Wow, that's weird. Okay, so we continue to share. Let's see.
You could go back to your slides from here now if you'd like to. But sometimes the system will automatically mute you if you play a video. But you're good to go now for your next question, Brian.
Okay. All right. Yeah. Let's jump ahead here a little bit. Because NASA admits that water is a problem for life. You know, we're talking about how can the question is, can life start in water? That's my question to you, Eric.
All living organisms are mostly water. Like the idea.
I'm not asking that. Can life start in water?
I don't see any problem with that. Again, we don't have any evidence.
What is hydrolysis?
Hydrolysis is the splitting of molecules by water, I believe.
Exactly. And here's a PhD in chemistry saying that life can't begin in water because water breaks apart the molecules faster than they get put together. And here's a NASA scientist saying the exact same thing. Life cannot begin in water. It's a problem. I don't have time to show you the video. Did you know there's $10 million on the table if you can produce a cell that divides? Did you know that?
I don't think I've heard that particular challenge, no.
Did you know no one knows how the first cell came about? Did you know that?
We have low resolution answers, but we don't know exactly.
Yeah, that's right.
You don't know how God did anything, so I don't know what
kind
of gotcha.
That's right. I believe in the miracle maker, but you don't. Okay, here's no. this tree of life. Okay. Is this
Brian,
you're not sharing.
If you could do us a favor, I think you might have to screen share again. You may have clicked the stop screen. But you guys are doing good. You just hit the 17-minute mark, so we still have 8 minutes, it looks like, for this round of cross-exam. To the audience, I am all caught up on your questions. Again, if you got a question on origins, we've been discussing quite a bit here in the world of origins, and so feel free to send in those questions and those challenges. Brian, whenever you're ready.
I don't see the screen. Okay, wait, here we go. All right, I need to screen share. Sorry about that. Sorry about that, Eric and Donnie.
No, that's okay. You guys are doing good.
Don't share. Okay, we're going to do this. Okay, the entire... Okay, all right, here we go. So now I can share this. Do you see my screen, huh?
Yes, yep, it's shared. You're good to go for your next question, Brian. Go ahead.
All right, let's go into this tree of life then. Okay. Is this an accurate representation? What in the world happened there? Okay. Do you think that we're related to snakes, Eric?
We share genes with snakes. That's what it means to be related.
All right. Which genome is bigger, the snakes or humans?
I don't know off the top of my head.
Okay. Do you think we're related to ferns? Actually, the humans are bigger than the snakes by about a billion.
Okay.
Do you think we're related to ferns?
We share genes with them, and yes, there is a fern with 23,000 chromosomes. That's not a problem.
Okay, and are we related to bacteria?
We share genes with them. That's what it means to be related to something.
Okay. It's just yes or no, it'd be fine. Inside that circle, what is the evidence that supports what's inside that circle?
The fact that we share genes with them, that's what it means to be related to something.
They have genetic evidence that makes this tree. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, long before we knew anything about genetics, it was predicted that there would be a hereditary molecule.
All right.
And then we found it. And if there were no correlations between organisms, then evolution would have been falsified.
Okay, I'd like you to divide those six animals into two groups, the most closely related. You got the horse, cow, sea snake, sea urchin, sheep, and silkworm. If you were to divide those into two groups based on their most common ancestor or relative or however you want to do it, just divide them into the two groups that should show up on that tree.
I believe the cow and the sheep would be most closely related because they're even-toed ungulates. Okay. Then the horse would be next. It's an odd-toe ungulate. Then the sea snake because it's a vertebrate. And then echinoderm versus silkworm. That one's tricky, but I think the silkworm would be the next most closely related, and then the sea urchin, because it's an echinoderm, I think would be at the end.
Just divide them into two groups. However you do it, give me two groups of names.
Oh, I was doing like an entire tree.
Just two groups, the ones that are most closely related.
Yeah, so vertebrates on top, cow, horse, snake, sheep, and then the non-vertebrates.
So kind of like that, is that what you would do?
No, snakes have bones, so snakes would go to the top.
Snakes would go to the top, and then the sea urchins and the silkworms on the bottom?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, you would be wrong. Because the correct answer is the silkworm sea urchin and the horse share the common ancestor on that gene. And the sea snake, sheep, and cow, they share it also. You can read about this in the Smithsonian. A quarter of the cow genome came from snakes. If you draw out the bovine's family tree, it looks like you've entered a bizarre parallel universe where cows are more closely related to snakes than elephants. And this is the family tree. You've got the silkworm, the sea urchin, and the horse right on top. And then you've got the sea snake and the sea sheep and the cow on the bottom. And there's example after example of this happening. So do you still think that that's an accurate representation of the life on Earth?
Yes, I do think this is accurate. I'd have to go back to what you showed me there and study that for a second to get exactly what's going on there.
The bovid family tree, bovid bee family tree, it's part of the DNA. Mm-hmm. And so they compared them. And the horse shows up with the sea urchin, and the sea snake shows up with the sheep.
Okay. Ah.
I've got it
pulled up, but it's paywalled, so I can't really read into
it. And I've got probably a dozen of these where the genomes don't fit what they expect. But you can ask about them later. But let's move on. Okay. Okay. Has collagen been found in dinosaur bones?
Yeah, tiny fragments of it.
Okay, how long can collagen last? Thousands, millions, or billions?
Yeah, this is hilarious. You guys say it can't last millions of years, but you don't think that the universe even is that old, so you can't make that claim.
Eric, A, B, or C, thousands, millions, or billions?
It's unknown precisely.
Oh, it is known. Collagen survival rate, research guide. They've got it at between 0.2 and 0.7 million. This is not
We haven't had that much time, so you don't know that. It can't last a million years, but according to you, that much time hasn't passed, so you don't know that.
No, this is what they're saying. The point of it is it can't last millions of years. And
how do you know that? Well, not my turn. Sorry.
Yeah, it's what they're saying, and there's other sources that do that also. Have blood cells been found?
Have they? Yeah. From what I understand, I read into this when I wrote my first book.
Just yes or no. Just yes or no.
Not everything is as simple as you think it is.
Okay, here we go.
They found impressions of blood vessels and red blood cells, but not the actual cells themselves.
So there won't be any stretchy red blood cells then?
Well, that's different. There are molecular remnants that remain in place from it, but not the thing itself.
Okay, not the thing itself. Well, this is what Mary Schweitzer says.
The laws of chemistry and biology and everything else that we know say that it should be gone. It should be degraded completely. And when I poked into it, it was spongy. It was flexible and soft tissue.
Flexible tissue from a 68-million-year-old dinosaur?
Blood vessels. Transparent. Hollow. Pliable, flexible, branching blood vessels that contain small round red microstructures floating in the vessels. I said, this is not possible. Do it again. We got another piece of bone. We put it in the solution. We waited 2 or 3 or 4 weeks. Looked again. More blood vessels. We must have repeated that with probably 17 or 18 different fragments of bone.
Yeah. And so they're shocked. They can't think of it, how it's happening. And okay, has C14 been found in dinosaurs?
Well, before you answer that, Eric, did you want to respond to the soft tissue Mary Schweitzer video at all before we move on?
Not really. I kind of said what I wanted to say about it before.
Okay.
Brian, go ahead. Move on to the next question. You have just over a minute left, by the way.
All right. Yeah. Has C14 been found in dinosaur bones?
You can find C14 in anything, including metal, which has no carbon in it, because there's always contamination. This has been experimentally verified.
Okay. So can we test carbon dating?
Yeah.
Or is that falsified? Oh, but it could be carbon dating. Well, they have found dinosaurs. You could go to newgeology.usa.
Yeah, okay, find carbon-14 in metal, which has no carbon in it.
Which dinosaurs turned into birds?
Oh, geez. You really don't know anything about evolution.
Which one has bird hips? Stegosaurus or the T-Rex?
This is... How are you like this? This is not how you determine what evolved from what.
Okay. Well, I'm just asking you, which one had bird hips? Was the Stegosaurus or was it the T-Rex?
Now you're switching your question, so you're being completely dishonest again. Neither of those is the ancestor of birds, and anybody who's looked into this for 10 seconds would know that. Okay, so this exposes quite a lot about you, doesn't it?
Well, let's forget that first test. Which dinosaur has bird hips? Is it the Stegosaurus or the T-Rex?
The Ornithischians have more bird-like hips, but the earliest birds have theropod dinosaur hips. Go look at an Archaeopteryx or a Microraptor or whatever else.
Which one? Is it the Stegosaurus or is it the T-Rex?
Yeah, this cute gotcha that you're trying to do here is just you being a completely shady and dishonest human being. It's absolutely repugnant. You changed your question to try to, and then when you realized who you're talking to, you flipped it so you could, okay, but which one does it look like? Utterly ridiculous. Okay.
Are there modern animals inside there, that circle?
Do fish exist? Yes.
Are they, would you have common ants? Would you have common, would you have animals that are living, organisms, current day organisms inside that circle?
Yeah, birds and fish exist, for example. Yeah.
One more question, Brian.
Okay.
what is that supposed to prove?
It's basically, how did life begin?
I can give you a low resolution answer, which is chemistry, because that's how life works today. Or we could go with magic. Which one do we have evidence of? Not magic.
All right. Yeah. Well.
Gentlemen. Very stimulating, fast-paced first roughly 25 minutes. You guys had me sweating. A little more stimulating than I'm used to, but it's good for a Saturday night showdown on Origins, isn't it? So, Brian, Planet Peterson, that was our first round of our 50-minute cross-exam. Brian, you led the way for roughly 25, 26 minutes on questions related to the topic. Planet Peterson, we'll reset the timer. You get to lead the way in questions and cross-exam for 25 minutes. Go ahead.
Thank you very much. So just before I do that, I'm actually going to... I read through that article from National Geographic, Brian, that you showed that said cows are more closely related to snakes. That's not what that article says. It's just showing, it's demonstrating... that there's a the transposons or the retro DNA or whatever, it throws a wrench in the way we do DNA analysis sometimes. So you're just peddling falsehoods by saying that. So anyways, on to the cross examination. So if the Bible's true, then the claims that the Bible makes are true. So without using the Bible, I bungled that really badly. If the Bible is true, then the claims that it makes are true. I think that makes perfect sense to anybody. So can you give me any evidence outside of the Bible that the universe is 6,000 years old?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you look at the amount of salt in the sea. There's not billions of years of salt in the sea. You look at the erosion rate.
Give me evidence that it's 6,000 years old, not that it's not some other number.
Okay, that is 6,000. That was Dr. Russell Humphreys. He accurately predicted the magnetic field of Uranus and Neptune in 1984. And we've got magnetic. Actually, the half-life of the Earth's magnetic field is 1,400 years. And so if we're billions of years old, why do we still have a magnetic field? Because like 10 or 20,000 years of it being stronger and stronger and stronger is going
to
destroy the
planet.
I
need you to give me a process that gets you precisely to 6,000 years.
Well, yeah, that's what he did. The magnetic field of Uranus and Neptune, he was accurate. Before NASA got out there, he accurately predicted that the magnetic field based on a 6,000-year model. And because they thought it won't have one, and it does. And even America, yeah. And so
people thought Uranus and Neptune wouldn't have magnetic fields.
The Big Bangers back then. They're supposed to be billions of years old.
Who thought that that those specific planets, which are compositionally not different. I didn't ask you if somebody else is wrong. I'm asking you for how do you get me to 6,000 years?
Their prediction. He accurately predicted the magnetic field of Uranus and Neptune because of, and he used a 6,000-year model. The Big Bangers had it way different.
How does it work? Is there any science behind how magnetic fields form and decay over time according to creationism?
Well, it decays.
How? How does any of this work?
Well... It decays, yeah, and it decays, and it can't be 20,000 years old because that it would be so strong back then, based on the half life that we have now.
It can't be part of an oscillating trend.
Well, you can imagine it if you want, but we don't have evidence of that.
So you don't have evidence that precludes a longer date in that case.
Well, not without making a rescuing device called a dynamo. You can imagine that, but there's no evidence for that. And a dynamo doesn't work with Uranus anyway because the magnetic core isn't on its axis. And so it's not going to work. Plus, it doesn't have measurable heat, and so it can't happen. And then Mercury's got a magnetic field too, and that's too small to have a dynamo. And so there's a lot of problems with that billions of years thing, but we never get to read about it. Astronomy points to a 6,000 years, and Russell Humphreys.
Anyways, I'm gonna reclaim my time here. So.
No, you asked me for evidences, and that's geology.
I'm cross-examining you, I'm reclaiming my time.
Well, no,
that's
how it
works.
You asked me for evidences, and I gave you one. I can give you three.
You've been rambling, you haven't given me an example that gets to 6,000 years. Well, so, Brian.
The mutation rate. The mutation rate goes back to 6,000 years. It doesn't go back millions or thousands of years.
No, it doesn't. John Sanford, who's a hack, he forces those models. I've read his scientific paper about this that African Americans have defective DNA repair structures, by the way.
Because
that's the kind of crap you have to say to force a conclusion into a model rather than doing real science. Brian, I need to ask you my next question here. What is the range of acceptable answers for how far should we be able to see given that the universe is 6,000 years old?
Well, as far as the telescopes can go.
What's the range of acceptable answers?
As far as they can, whatever technology, they can look as far as the technology lets them look.
I'm not asking you about technology. I'm asking you what's the range. I'm not asking you the limits of technology. What is the acceptable range for how far we should be able to see if the universe was created 6,000 years ago?
As far as technology allows us. We can see as far as...
I'm not asking you about technology. So you're just saying the answer is whatever the answer is.
No, we can see as far as the technology allows us to see. That's what I'm saying. There's no range for how far we can see. We can see as far as the range, as far as technology.
You're completely misunderstanding my question. So if I said a car's been driving at 100 miles an hour for 1 hour, the acceptable range of answers is really small.
Well, that's different. Driving and seeing is different.
No, not fundamentally when it comes to this observation. No, not really. So if the universe is only 6,000 years old, what I'm trying to get to is, why do we see for billions of light years? How is that in any way congruous with 6,000-year creation?
God made the stars on 6 days, and then he stretched out the heavens.
What evidence of that do you have?
That's why we got the accelerating... our universe is expanding at an accelerating rate, and you have to figure out dark energy doing that. I know.
What evidence that God created the stars and everything the way we see it today 6,000 years ago do you have?
The heavens declare the glory of God.
So you have no evidence.
Of what?
What I just asked you.
About how far we can see?
What evidence do you have that the universe was created billions of light years across 6,000 years ago?
The Bible.
That's what you call evidence.
It's a historical document.
Do you consider this to be science? What you're doing?
Yeah.
In what way is this science?
We look at all the evidence, put it all on the table, and we don't exclude one view. You know, it's like you got the creation model and the Big Bang and the blind chance model, and the blind chancers have eliminated.
So you accept the Hindu perspective of creation.
I don't know what that is.
Do you accept it?
I don't know. Do they have a book that's historically, archaeologically, and prophetically and scientifically accurate?
You have that?
Yeah.
Scientific, for crying out loud. So how is it that we can see billions of light years, given that the universe is only 6,000 years old and light would not have been able to travel billions of years in that amount of time?
Well, you got the same light problem. It's called the horizon problem. How you
answer the question?
Okay, what? How is that? God stretched out the heavens.
What evidence of that do you have?
He stretched them out.
What evidence of that do you have?
It says that several times in the Bible. He stretched it out. He stretched it
out.
That's
not evidence. What evidence of that do you have? How can you explain this scientifically?
I believe he created everything with the word of his mouth.
That's a scientific explanation to you?
Well, there's science that backs it up.
Such as?
Semantics.
What?
Semantics.
What is semantics?
It's the science of visible sound.
What does that have to do with the universe being billions of light years across?
Well, if he can make stuff with his voice, he can do that.
I'm asking for evidence of... What? What does this thing about sound waves have to do with the universe being billions of light years across?
It has to do with him creating it. The Bible says that by the word of his testimony, by his word, he made stuff. You know, by his word, the faith through understanding, the worlds that were framed by the word of God. And so by his word, that's what he did. And there's a science called semantics that is kind of validating that.
In what way does it validate that the universe is only 6,000 years old?
Well, it's just, well, okay, well, not the age, but that sounds can produce things.
So you think that, jeez, where on earth do we go from here? Did God use the laws of physics to create the universe?
Well, he didn't use the first law because that's matter from nothing. He made matter from nothing. He didn't do the second law because he organized it real well. And also the law of biogenesis. Well, I guess a life giver did give life. And the rest of it, he probably did with semantics.
I was really just looking for a yes or no. Did God use the laws of physics to create the universe?
I wasn't there.
So you have no idea?
Well, I think semantics can... I think there's evidence that words can create things. I think there's evidence for that.
Could you give one example other than the thing we're discussing here, which is the creation of the universe?
Can I share my screen?
I don't care.
Is that possible there, Donnie?
Yeah, sure.
What do I have to do?
Just click the present entire screen.
Okay.
And we can
entire put screen, that up for share you. Screen. Share screen, the entire screen.
And just for time, you're just less than 11 minutes.
Don't count this. Give him extra time.
I got to pause. No worries.
Yeah.
John Stuart Reed of Keswick, England, is the co-inventor of a new instrument called the cymoscope. It converts sound into three-dimensional geometric images in water. Sound effects matter in surprising ways, a mystery that has recently deepened.
Cymatics is the science of visible sound. Here we have the beautiful song of a humpback whale. Some of this geometry that we're seeing is just exquisitely beautiful.
Okay, like I've seen a trilobite.
It made a trilobite.
Well, it roughly looks like a trilobite.
Yeah.
It didn't make a trilobite. It made. I mean, that's not a starfish. That's something with five vertices.
Okay, yeah, but... And then it makes these images, the sound.
Okay.
So, I mean, it's...
So, did God create the universe by using physical sound waves?
I don't know. He just said, and God said, well, actually, you know, we can take a look at
what he said.
So,
okay. Well, basically, it's, you know, over and over again, and God said, and God said, and God said, let the waters bring forth, let the earth bring forth, let the light be in the firmaments. And God said, and God said, it's over and over again. And then we've got evidence that these things, that these vibrations in water look like trilobites and other things that are millions of years old. And I think that that's worthy of consideration.
The clouds look like things. And if I invent a religion that says everything was created by clouds, then all of a sudden I have evidence? No. I'm really trying to get... I can't tell if you're agnostic about this or if you're trying to avoid answering the question. Does God use the laws of physics to perform his miracles?
Hey, I'm not God. I'm,
so you have no idea.
I have no idea.
So should we discard the God hypothesis because it violates the laws of physics?
What's that?
Should we discard the God hypothesis from science because it violates the laws of physics?
Well, no, it just defeats the definition of science, not the laws of science. You define God out of the science book. Here's a science book that says it's limited to physical explanations. Here's another one that says our goal is to provide natural explanations. Another one says that it goes on to say that there's significant uncertainty about how life began. However, any questions that remain are about how evolution works, not whether it occurred. So they won't even allow a designer in the classroom.
Because it's not scientific.
Well, that's because you define it. You define science out of it. You say it's a naturalistic process.
You define your creator out of it. You said, yes, you do. You said, okay, are you going to retract your statement that an explanation that requires miracles is not scientific? Because you said that.
Well, that's because you go a little farther in the talk, and I say if you allow for God and the miracles at the beginning, you don't break any laws of physics. And what I'm talking about is changing the definition of science
Does a miracle preserve the laws of physics?
What?
How does a miracle preserve the laws of physics?
How does a miracle preserve the laws of physics?
Yes. How is a miracle consistent with the laws of physics? A miracle, by definition, is the violation of the laws of physics.
Well, yeah, you tell me. You tell me where the matter came from without violating laws of physics. You tell me how it all got organized without violating laws of physics. You tell me how life
began. I've never given you an answer of where the universe came from.
I know. It's a perspective of the past, and you need to look into that.
A perspective. It's an admission of something, but it's not a perspective. You're trying to sell people that a miracle happened while saying that your system is scientific, while saying miracles, if you have a miracle in your explanation, it needs to be thrown out and it's not scientific. This is contradictory.
We all believe in miracles, Eric.
No, I don't.
Okay, then where did the matter come from?
I don't know.
Okay. Well, it had to.
Is that a miracle? Is me saying I don't know what happened? Right. Me saying that a miracle happened?
Okay, just because you don't know how it happened doesn't mean
the question was, if I say I don't know what happened, does that mean I'm claiming that a miracle happened?
Well, where did the matter come from?
The question is, if I say I don't know what happened, does that mean I'm claiming that a miracle happened?
That's semantics.
Yeah, so the question is, if I don't know what happened, am I claiming that a miracle happened?
Well, you're not claiming it, but you're...
Precisely.
But it still had to happen in your worldview. You still had to have matter from nothing, life from non-life. It had to happen, whether you know how it happened or not. And if you don't know how it happened, how do you know God didn't do it?
Oh, what the heck?
Well, Eric, I think you went on mute.
Thanks. I'm just going to go to the next thing, but it'll be along the same sort of theme. So, Brian, you claim that science is observable, testable, repeatable.
That's what the National Science National Center for Education. I mean, that's our textbook. It says it's testable. That's what our textbook says. So that's what I'm going with.
Sure. Does the past fit any of those categories?
Does the past fit if it's testable?
Testable, observable, testable, repeatable. Does the past fit any of those categories?
Well, if somebody observed it, yeah.
I'm talking about us today.
Yeah, like there's forensics people, they figure out what happened in the past. There's, you know, things like that. But the
so why do you say evolution isn't science if it does the same kind of thing forensics does?
Because there's a lot of imagination in the assumptions.
Same with forensics.
Yeah. But there's
okay, so why is one not science then? They both make assumptions. They both operate on what happened in the past based on assumptions, but they look for evidence that they formed from those assumptions. But one is science and one is not science. How does that work?
Well, it's because you're looking so far in the past. There's so much assuming going on there.
Being afraid of big numbers is not an argument. What's the actual argument?
What? If millions of years,
that's so long ago. Hand wave it away. What's the? That's the best you can do for dealing with your hypocrisy of forensics is science, but evolution isn't science, when they're both scientific investigations of the past predicated on assumptions.
Well, yeah, there's a murder yesterday and there's got fresh evidence, but then there's these bones in the dirt. I mean, there's a lot of time for things to get misinterpreted there. And it all goes on. It all goes to our assumptions. You know, if you believe in blind chance, you're going to think millions of years. And if you believe in creation, you might think of...
Where is the blind chance in the evolutionary perspective?
Where's the designer in the evolutionary perspective?
You should have asked that question when it was your turn. Where is the blind chance?
Random mutations.
How is that blind chance?
How is it not blind chance?
Brilliant. Do you know what natural selection is?
Yeah.
Okay. Describe natural selection.
It explains the survival of the fittest, but not the arrival of the fittest. It can't explain how something got there.
There's a population of organisms, right, and they all are a little bit different. What does natural selection do with that population?
Natural selection doesn't do anything. It's not a person. It's not anything.
Yeah, I know. It doesn't have a teleology. It's a description of a process.
Right.
I know that you know this, so just quit avoiding the question. There is a population of organisms and they have variation among them. A lot of that variation is caused by these unpredictable mutations. What does the natural selection process do as a consequence to the population?
Yeah, they're unpredictable, random mutations.
I didn't ask you about the mutations. I asked you about natural selection.
Well, the ones that were adapted would survive better than the ones that weren't.
So it's not blind luck and random chance. There's a selective process involved in the entire thing.
I really hope that you quit
doing this ridiculous straw man where you conflate that mutations happen in an unpredictable manner with the evolution by natural selection process, because they're not the same. You've just admitted they're not the same. So I really hope you start being honest in the future.
Natural
about this.
Selection needs something to select.
Yeah, random a population chance. Of organisms.
Right, but you needed random chance to get there. How did this life begin? Random chance.
That has nothing to do.
There's nothing to select. That's a random chance. That's a blind chance.
No, it's not.
It's not a blind chance that life evolved?
No.
Where's the natural selection can't select anything that's not reproducing. So to get to that part, you have to
you
have
some... You do know that we have autocatalytic chemical cycles that undergo natural selection, right? No, there's no chance you know that. Are you aware that we have been able to create synthetic autocatalytic chemical cycles that actually compete with each other in the lab?
You can't make a cell membrane.
Brilliant. So you don't know anything about it. So we have seen that chemical systems can actually compete against each other, and they're autocatalytic, which means they perpetuate their own. They have like a cyclical nature, which is what life is.
Yeah, they're highly concentrated too. They're not like that in nature. Highly concentrated chemicals. Highly concentrated chemicals in nature.
Have you read any research on like hydrothermal vents and and the like the way we've found the Krebs cycle and Krebs cycle, what do you call it, precursors near hydrothermal vents, and we've discovered these autocatalytic systems both in nature and in the lab.
So no. get your $10 million, Eric.
Because we can't answer this one particular question, the whole thing is therefore false. Brian, I'll give you $1 billion if you can tell me how God did anything.
He spoke it into existence.
I didn't ask. That's a description of how he did it?
Yeah.
Explain. Explain how he spoke it into existence.
Well, I think it probably had to do with semantics.
So you think that God used sound waves?
Well, he said he spoke it into existence. That's what he said. I've got no reason to doubt him.
So God is a physical being that uses sound waves?
I'm not sure how he did it.
Okay, so you don't get your $1 billion then because you have no idea.
Well, I can't. Yeah, his ways are way above my ways. Yeah, that's right. I'm not God.
Well, then quit calling it science. Can you name one scientific idea that's ever been disproven by Christianity? Or creation, I guess we can be more broad.
How about the geocentric universe? How'd that fall apart?
You're aware that it was Christians that were fighting. The Christians were the defenders of the geocentrism. Are you just not aware of that? They said, according to the Bible, because it says God made the sun stop moving for a day, that meant that it's the sun that's moving around the earth, not the other way around. That was their justification. They had a biblical justification for geocentrism.
Yeah, that's not how I heard it. But okay, so you want to know what a creationist, what science has that proven wrong?
Yeah, what scientific idea has creationism ever proven wrong?
I would say the idea of the superior race.
I mean, that was a fringe and unscientific view held by just pretty despicable people.
Well, yeah, but it had, you know, that's the logical conclusion. If the
it is not
survive.
The logical conclusion. Okay, so luckily science proved genetically that all human beings are the same, because Christianity's perspective is that God created races differently for certain races to be slaves of other races.
No, that's
there,
not
that's
true.
That's the Christian perspective. Thank anything no, that, other than God, we don't have bullshit like that running around anymore. Thanks, science, for debunking the racism of Christianity. I think we're at the end of my time.
That's not true.
Yeah, it's a ridiculous straw man to mirror your position.
No, we're all of one blood. We all go back to Noah.
Not according to the Bible.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, it's
okay. Well, there were Christians that didn't think that way. So in the exact same way that you said, there were racist people who had false scientific sounding ideas, that means that that's what science was, and thankfully Christianity disproved it. I'll just flip that right back at you. Jefferson Davis, that's your guy, the racist that said that blacks were created to be the slaves of whites. That's the Christian perspective. Luckily, we now know, thanks to genetics, that that's not true. Thanks, science. No.
Brian, feel free to have the last word, because Eric had the last word in the last round. We are a little bit over the 25-minute mark, so again, feel free to respond however you'd like to, and then we'll jump into some concluding statements.
Yeah, I think that may not have turned things around, but there was a Christian that invented the MRI, and he did not get the MRI. He did not get the Nobel Prize for the MRI because he was a creationist, Raymond Damadian, and it's his MRI that's in the Smithsonian. He's got the patent on the MRI, but because of the blind, you know, this bias against a creationist, he didn't get the Nobel Prize. They could have gave it to three people and they only gave it to two. And what I'm trying to do is get a level playing field. Let all the ideas in on the table, put them all out there, and then focus on the ones that makes accurate predictions. Because right now we got a lot of sharp minds aren't going into science because they don't want to play that game. You got to bow down to the Big Bang and the geologic column, and you're going to get fired. And people don't want to play that, and it's hurting science. Junk DNA is one example that the creationists figured out, and vestigial organs.
Okay, gentlemen, that wraps up our fast-paced, engaging cross-examination, close to an hour of back and forth questions and dialogue on the topic. We do have 5 minutes each for concluding statements, 5 minutes to give us an opportunity to address anything we feel has been left hanging, as there has been quite a bit discussed, lots of questions brought up, lots of points put on the floor here, and land the plane on our respective positions tonight, give our audience the best representations possible of the viewpoints being represented. Hopefully the audience can examine those in an objective manner. Reminder to our audience, we've got our audience Q&A coming up soon, 10 minutes roughly after our concluding statements. Therefore, you got about 10 minutes to send in your questions. Perhaps you heard something that Brian said tonight or Eric said tonight and you disagree with it and you want to challenge it or put forth an objection, feel free to do so. End your challenges with a question mark and we'll engage those for about 25 minutes. Okay, Brian, I see your screen shared. And again, we've got 5 minutes each for a concluding statement. Brian, I'll start it on your first word. Go ahead.
All right. We're going to ask, will blind chancers allow people to think? You know, it was a science stopper when it came to junk DNA and vestigial organs. And I believe the proper perspective is based on fact and logic. And I didn't have enough time to show how evolution is based on a lot of imagination, the Oort cloud, multiverse, dynamo, dark matter, dark energy, and unknown processes for soft dinosaur tissues. And that's all imagination to prop up millions of years. It violates laws of physics. It gave us the superior race, junk DNA, and vestigial organs, and that was wrong. But if you believe in that, well, who am I? A mutated animal? What am I worth? Not much. And if you're a useless eater, you can get killed like by your government, like in Germany. And why am I here? Well, it's no purpose. And where do I go when I die? It doesn't matter if you were Mother Teresa or Hitler, you go to the same place. And that's what this person did in Benton, Kentucky. He fatally shot two high school classmates and shot a bunch of other people as an experiment to see how people would react. And he said he was an atheist and that his life had no purpose and other people's lives had no purpose. And I reject that 100%. And I let this talk.
Materialism is not science. It's simply a worldview that fails to explain or even consider the most profound, interesting, and beautiful aspects of human reality. Materialists are free to preach their religion, but they should stop pretending it's science. We want to follow the evidence, wherever it leads, and decide for ourselves. We are not materialists. We see the human soul. We experience love. We live with purpose. We fight for justice. We are the quiet majority, and we will be quiet no longer.
That's right. It's time to rise up. And I think that we need a scientific revolution. We really do. Widespread belief systems seldom change when frequently reinforced by influential institutions. And that's right. People on top, they don't want to change because they got the power. But when vast numbers of people realize they've been misled, an intellectual revolution begins. And we have been misled. There's errors in our textbooks. There's errors in our museums. And we're being forced to think of a blind chance perspective of the past. And I think a better perspective is the creation timeline. We don't need rescuing devices to explain the fine-tuned universe or the comets or the magnetic field or young galaxies and dinosaurs. And we make accurate predictions. We didn't talk about the hydroplate, accurately predicting what they'd find in comets and asteroids. We don't violate laws of physics, and we didn't have the superior race. And I think the creator revealed himself in a book that's scientifically, historically, archaeologically, and prophetically accurate. And when you believe that, you have different answers to these questions. Who am I? I'm a child of God, made in his image. What am I worth? I'm in priceless. You know what he did for me so I can go to heaven? And why am I here? It's to glorify God and help other people get to heaven. And where do I go when I die? I'm going to heaven because of what Jesus did, not because of what I do. And this book also talks about a flood. There's a judgment. God judged sin. You could have escaped that judgment inside the ark, but there's another judgment coming. And you can escape that one by putting your faith in Jesus Christ to pay for your sins. And I'm doing everything I can to help people get the proper perspective of the past. And, I was at St. Cloud State and a psych student came up to me and he said, what are you doing here? And I said, well, if you saw a blind person walking towards a cliff, would you warn them? And he said, yeah, absolutely. And I said, well, that's what I see. I see people who are blinded and they're walking towards a cliff because they're believing a blind chance perspective of the past. And if they, well, they're walking toward a cliff for whatever reason, they've rejected Jesus. And if they go over that cliff, they're going to spend an eternity in hell. And I want to reach them. And I'll do what I can to reach them and let the people have a, basically, I just want people to have all the information so they can make informed decisions. And it's not happening in class. And it's hurting science. We need to, hopefully the hydroplate will bring us out of these dark ages. So thank you so much, Donnie. And thank you, Eric, for participating in this. And Donnie, for putting this together. And anybody else who's still here.
It's my pleasure, Brian. And Eric, the both of you, appreciate the passion and energy for tonight's great origins debate. I will reset the timer. And Planet Peterson, you also get 5 minutes for a concluding statement. We'll start it now. Go ahead.
Yes, it'll probably be pretty short. I mean, I didn't prepare my closing statement. I was just planning on reflecting on the debate. But I'm trying to remember the stuff Brian brought up there because it would have been great to respond to most of it. But does creation science exist? Well, literally, according Brian says that it does, but according to his view on things, not only does it not exist, but it's a contradiction. It can't exist. And I don't think Brian's ever spent 5 seconds of his life thinking about these things, because when I pressed him on things like, how do you actually deal with the evidence we see about the size of the universe, for example, given your worldview? I mean, nothing was brought up. There was scared silence for the most part, the entire time. Then with regard to when I tried to get some sort of explanation of something, sound waves, what evidence that this is how, like literally just using a video of people using sand on a table to make patterns that superficially resemble things is evidence that actual material things in the universe were created with sound waves. And that's how the Christian God did things with sound waves. Well, I don't know. Like, this whole thing was just a presentation of absolutely nothingness. It was mostly poisoning the well and fallacious accusations and rhetoric directed toward the what Brian considers the opposing worldview. And again, with all the claims about, like, well, secularists can't tell you what's right or wrong, or like the racism, whatever, as if there hasn't been slavery and racism that's been biblically justified and done by Christians for thousands of years and continues to happen today. And then, like, the point about ultimate salvation or whatever, I don't know what kind of Christian Brian is. But if he's the kind of Christian that says, well, as long as you have faith, then you're saved, then there's no such thing as right or wrong. If Hitler just accepted Jesus the moment before he died, he'd go to heaven. Whereas somebody who lived in a part of the world that never heard of Jesus but never did anything wrong and lived a long life would die and go to hell. So just rife hypocrisy, unseriousness, and nothing of any substance or anything that could even charitably be called tangential to science presented tonight. So that's my closing statement.
All right. That concludes the concluding statements and our main portion of tonight's debate. The opening statements, rebuttals, a cross-exam, a lively cross-exam, and concluding statements. We've also had an excellent interactive chat with a good diversity of views in our live chat tonight. And so, gentlemen, Brian and Eric, let's get into some Q&A here. It looks like we got a pretty good mix of questions for the both of you. And so let's start here from the beginning. Okay, first question comes in for Brian, and it's from Jeremy Tan. Jeremy, thank you for the question. And he's wondering, Brian, if we're finding DNA function everywhere we look, do you mean every time we check, we find function as in 100% of the time. Brian, go ahead.
I'm not sure I understand the question, but the junk DNA, they figured that it was 8% because that's how much we, you know, they figured that there was only 8% that was actually functional. And they thought the rest of it was junk, and it held back science for a long time, a whole long time. And now we're finding pretty much the trend is that it's almost everything is, it's may not code for DNA, but it has to do with, it has function, and it's a gold mine. It's not something that they, you know, Eugenie Scott said that it was one of the best evidence for evolution back in 98 because it was junk. And now we realize it's not junk. So I'm not sure if that answered the question or not, but that's.
I think to clarify, Brian, he might be wondering, according to the creationist position, how functional is the genome, or how functional would you expect it to be? 100%, 80%?
Oh, I'd expect it to be well, there's probably mutations in there. I think it was designed to be 100%, just like the vestigial organs. You know, there was used to be 100 vestigial organs, taking out your tonsils, taking out your appendix, and now we realize, oh, there's a function for that. So I think as time goes by, we're going to find functions for everything. It's a new design.
I appreciate it, Brian. Eric, the floor is yours. Go ahead.
I mean, I guess the only thing I would say is in science, when we learn new things, we accept them and we update our models. Sometimes things are not readily accepted, like what Alfred Wegener thought about continental drift wasn't accepted, but now it's only creationists that deny plate tectonics. So there's the fact that we learn new things and have accountability in science is its strength. Christianity's never been updated and refined and improved. In fact, they're dogmatic and think that can't happen. So what's the proper perspective? Somebody that tells you everything we believe is the ultimate and infinite truth and the only truth and the whole truth, so help you, or a system that self-improves. You decide.
Thank you, Eric. Brian, question was for you. Therefore, you get the last word. Go ahead.
Well, I think it's interesting. You ignore the founding fathers of science who brought us by, like Newton and Pascal and all them. And yeah, we adjust to science. We adjust to things. And the hydroplate is a perfect example. Well, if it can ever get in the mainstream, it's making accurate predictions. Go into hydroplate.org or on YouTube. And it's the findings that NASA's found as far as the DNA in Ryugu, and also these other amino acids or minerals that are on Bennu, those strongly validate the hydroplate. And so I think that, yeah, creationists, we change with the times too. And we're just trying to find out how God did it. And the hydroplate's a very good flood model, and it explains a lot of things. And so we'll leave it with that.
Thank you, Brian. Okay, now we got one for you. Planet Peterson comes in from Echoing Erudite. Question for Planet. Do you agree science deals with facts, not imagination? And as an example, can you give one observable fact for evolution that doesn't rely on imagination or storytelling?
What kind of question is this? This seems to be the thing where people say, oh, but that's just an assumption. Literally, anytime you do anything, it doesn't have to be science. Literally, when you walk around your own house, you have to assume that your senses are giving you reliable information about what's going on in your house. Oh, maybe there's a tiger in the house, but you just can't see it for some reason. So what this guy's trying to do is to say that, oh, evolution is predicated on assumptions, therefore it's not science. This is so incredibly stupid. What we saw today was Brian agrees that forensics is science, even though it's the study of things that happened in the past. Evolution is not a different kind of science. It works according to the exact same principles.
Thank you, Planet. And Brian, floor is yours. Go ahead.
It is not the same, because forensics guys, they do not have to invent rescuing devices to make sure that they get the right answer, where evolution is full of rescuing devices. It's what you imagine to be true, so you don't have to give up billions of years. And that would be the Oort cloud, never been observed. That would be, you know, how do we get that? That'd be the multiverse. And that would be the dark matter, dark energy,
all these things that you have to imagine to be true, even the soft tissue. They're going to try to figure out now, how did that last so long instead of just changing the dates of the dinosaur? And also, you know, you had asked earlier that there was also geology points to 6,000 years too, because Russell Humphreys, he also accurately predicted the zircon rates, diffusion rates out of helium. And that came, he did that with a 6,000 year model too. So biology, geology, astronomy, they all point to 6,000 years. If you aren't trying to force make these rescuing devices to justify your position.
Thank you, Brian. Eric, you get the last word. Question was for you. Go ahead.
We can see billions of light years. How does that point to 6,000 years? That was the most hilarious moment of the debate. Brian was reduced to absolute silence when asked to come up with an explanation for that. So no, nothing about cosmology points to 6,000 years. Geology. Absolutely nothing about geology points to 6,000 years. Radiometric dating uncontrovertibly gives us dates of billions and billions of years. And then for, I don't remember even what the third thing that was said points to it, if it's biology or evolution or whatever, but literally none of that points to 6,000. What a ridiculous statement.
Okay, gentlemen, appreciate the responses. Next one comes in for Brian Lauer, comes in from Coco Rose. Would Brian be able to give us his definition of acceptable evidence so we know where his starting point is?
Well, I think logic is good. Logic would be a good thing. I think a building had a builder, a painting had a painter, a creation had a creator. I think evidence should be logical. I don't think there should be inconsistencies in our worldview. I think it's absurd to think that a building had a builder, a painting had a painter, but a creation did not have a creator. You know, this building that I'm in, it's absurd to think it got put together by blind chance. And yet I'm supposed to think my body got put together by blind chance. So what evidence? And also testable. Let's test it. Let's not make up and find, when we find evidence, let's not make up some rescuing device to make it last longer, like iron or whatever. You know, it's, I think the evidence should be testable, logical, and factual. And I believe that's strongly on the creation side.
Thank you, Brian. Planet Peterson, the floor is yours. Go ahead.
There's absolutely nothing about I'm just going to keep going back to the same thing, I guess. There's absolutely nothing about the fact that our observable universe is 43 billion light years in radius that is consistent with a 6,000 year creation model. Brian's brought up rescuing devices several times. All you have is a rescuing device, because if the Bible didn't exist, nobody could get to 6,000 years. Your only choice is to stutter and stammer and say, well, God did it that way with his word. So that's what I would say in response to that.
Eric, thank you very much. Brian, you get the last word on this one. Go ahead.
You got the same light problem, Eric. You got the horizon problem. You can't get light over to all those either. You got the same problems. And it's scientifically, and we don't have to have rescuing devices to explain comets or the magnetic fields. It all fits in a young Earth creation.
It doesn't.
It sure does.
How does it fit the existence of comets?
We're not 10,000 years old.
Explain.
How do you explain that they're there after billions of years?
Again, shift the burden of proof. So you can't do it for comets. Why can we see 43 billion light years? How is that consistent with 6,000 year creation timeline?
See, that's a distance. That's not a time. That's a distance.
Can light travel that many light years in 6,000 years?
I don't know what God can do with light.
So you don't have anything. All you do is retrofit your conclusion into the evidence.
You don't have anything either.
The only reason we know any of this stuff is because of science. The Bible never told us anything about the true structure of the cosmos, whether or not other galaxies exist, how big it is. It never did any of that. You retrofit your conclusion into the evidence, violating the spirit of science.
No, anyways, the Bible gives us the framework for biology. It's everything produces.
Talking about the size of the universe, Brian.
What?
Talking about the size of the universe, Brian, you don't have anything for that. You can't get 43 billion light years from 6,000 year creation, except to say, I believe in God and God did it that way.
Well, what you do is, I don't know how it happened. I don't know how it happened. So you're an I don't know of the gaps.
The Big Bang model is extremely rigorous and well-tested.
Go into cosmology.org and you're going to see a bunch of people that say this is doesn't work. You have to add, because when Danny Faulkner was, when he was in college in the 80s, they had 100% confidence in the Big Bang, and it didn't have inflation or dark matter or dark energy or string theory, and they had to add that to keep it from falling apart. And now they have 100% confidence in the Big Bang today, and he says it's not a matter of if it falls apart, it's a matter of when it falls apart. And it would have fallen apart a long time ago, but they don't have anything to replace it with. And that's what I think, the hydroplate will destroy the Big Bang. If anybody watches Kevin Lee's talk on at Creation Forum, it destroys the Big Bang, because everything...
The hydroplate is a stupid flood narrative about geology. That's going to disprove cosmology.
Hey, why is the near side of the moon pounded and the far side isn't? The moon the Earth protects the near side. How come we got the lava flows on the near side and not the far side? Why is the Pacific Ocean so much different than the other ones? What caused the Mariana Trench?
You know,
how did a mammoth freeze standing up? How come they find rounded boulders in asteroids?
And that tells us how old the universe is. A mammoth that was frozen.
Well, we can explain it. Can you?
No, you can't. You just say God did it. That's not an explanation.
Well, I'll explain it for you.
Go ahead. I mean,
yeah, because the founts of the Great Deep broke up with such tremendous force that some of the stuff went up into outer space.
What evidence of that do you have?
The standing frozen mammoth. We also have accurate predictions.
You think that comets falling to the Earth... You know comets... You know that objects... that re-enter Earth's atmosphere from space are going dozens of kilometers per second and explode when they hit the ground, right? But that's gonna freeze dry a mammoth?
Well, that's because they're coming in with such tremendous force. If they just go up there and then slowly come back, they're gonna come down and they're gonna freeze the mammoths. Okay,
you have evidence that that happened?
How about accurate predictions?
Do you have evidence that any of that happened?
Well, yeah, accurate predictions are evidence of a robust theory.
Do you have any evidence that comets slowly came down to the Earth?
I'm not talking comets. I'm talking the water that's found up from shot up from the founts of the Great Deep.
Sure, do you have any evidence of that?
Yeah, the Mid-Oceanic Ridge. What do you think caused? What do you think caused the mountain range to grow in two directions by stretching? Most mountain ranges
are crushed. It's not stretching.
Together.
Magma comes up to the surface and reforms, and it's a divergent plate boundary.
Look at the tension cracks. They're straight.
Look at the ages of the continent of the oceanic crust, and notice that it makes a perfect pattern going outward. Anyways, we can't have a new debate within the debate here. People asked questions, but.
The audience enjoyed the mini round two during the Q&A. We can call that the great comet / hydroplate theory debate. So, gentlemen, okay, again, appreciate the energy. Let's move on now to the next question. As a matter of fact, it looks like we do have a question on the hydroplate hypothesis. So good time to bring this one up, perhaps. Question for both, but more so directed at you, Brian. And so let's go through it. Sydney Raptor, appreciate the question. If hydroplate hypothesis is true, where did the additional 3.5 times the current amount of water go? That's how much is needed to cover the world.
Well, that's because you're thinking that the world, that Mount Everest is as high as it was during the flood. And I'm not saying that. I'm not saying the water was above Mount Everest. I'm saying Mount Everest was under the water. There's a big difference. Mount Everest wasn't there during the flood, and it rose up. And if you would take the oceans and rise them up and make them push the land down, so you'd have a perfectly round Earth, you'd have a mile and a half of water over everything. And so that's where the water came from, or the water came from the fountains of the Great Deep. We believe that half of the ocean was inside the Earth at one time. And then it erupted out, and now a lot of it went up into tremendous force, and that's went into comets and asteroids, and that's why Kevin Lee is able to make accurate predictions, and NASA is wrong, and they're spending millions of dollars wasting it because they think asteroids are solid, and they're actually floating rock piles. And that's how we get peanut-shaped asteroids. That's how we get contact binaries and moons and asteroids with moons. They thought that was impossible in the 70s, and now they keep finding them everywhere. And the only thing that explains it is the hydroplate, and yet it's being kicked to the curb. And so that's where the water came from and where the water went.
Brian, thank you very much. Eric, over at Planet Peterson, floor is yours. Go ahead.
The idea that asteroids in space can only be described by this hydroplate thing, this is so ridiculous. So Brian will get the last word, and here's what he's not going to do. Brian, give any evidence for your specific claim about most of the water was in the Earth and then it came out of the Earth. What Brian's doing is giving his hypothesis and then just saying this is what could have happened, and then there's never any evidence for it. So go ahead. What specific evidence do you have that the water came out of the Earth? And Mount Everest wasn't as tall. Evidence of that do you have?
Okay, you want to say how it came out? Serpentine. They found that in asteroid Bennu, and that's just where the mantle touches the water, and that's they found that up in the comet. And they're making accurate predictions. That accurate predictions are the currency of science, and there's a whole bunch of them for the hydroplate. And Kevin Lee accurately predicted what they'd find in comets, and NASA was wrong. He accurately predicted what the structure of asteroids would be, and NASA was wrong. And so it's time to bring this theory into the fold and start discussing it. And yet the big bangers, they won't let it in the door. Oh, no. Our way is the only way to think, so you have to think like us. That's because we're the scientists, and we're the ones who messed up junk DNA and vestigial organs. But to
miracles
keep our
aren't science, Brian Lauer.
Keep our word for it. But no, I want people to be able to discuss things openly. I don't think ideas to be cast out. It's like if I had a chest of gold and I hit it and I hit it and I'll give you all the grant money to find it and I'll give it but I'll, and you can only look in your apartment building, but I hide it outside. You'll never find it. And that's what's happening today. God is the answer, but you won't look for him because it's not allowed. And I'm just saying, let the ideas go where, let people think wherever they go and don't fire them for thinking differently. And I think that's disgusting as it can be. You force people to think that your way is right. Your way is right, and it's the only way to think. And that's not science. That's indoctrination.
Okay, gentlemen, appreciate the responses on that one and the mini hydroplate debate there. Very good, very interesting. Kevin's biblical discussion. So that one was for you, Brian, or at least directed towards you. Planet Peterson, this one's for you. So Kevin says, for Planet Peterson, what is metaphysically necessary for everything?
This is like, this is a gobbledygook question. I would think that Brian agrees that this is a gobbledygook question. In fact, you know,
I'm glad it went to you, Eric.
You know what the definition of metaphysics is? Or one of the definitions, an abstract theory with no basis in reality. So to say that there, I mean, this is some weird Philbro, just unbearable stuff. What is metaphysically necessary for everything? On what grounds are we claiming that something that is metaphysical is the reason that things exist? Like, what the hell does necessary for everything mean? The reason things exist? The reason things are intelligible? What? This is just complete nonsense. But the other thing about metaphysical claims is there are a lot, like I've been reading some like philosophy from, you know,
hey,
like
good for you, Jason Lyle.
No, gee, oh, no bummer. Philosophy. No,
bummer.
This is like some Vienna Circle stuff about logical positivism, and not everything in it resonates with me. But they kind of reject this concept of metaphysics, sort of. In whole, but I'm rambling too much, but you take competing metaphysical claims, they are empirically unjustifiable, and so you have no recourse for going with one over the other. So this is just a nonsense question.
Metaphysics showdown between Planet Peterson and Kevin's biblical discussion. Sounds fun. Brian Lauer, over to you. The floor is yours. What are your thoughts?
I don't know what to say, but I'm thankful that Kevin stuck to the end, and anybody else who's still listening,
yes, you guys have provided more than enough entertainment for this Saturday night Origins showdown. Even made me sweat a little bit, guys. So definitely both coming in swinging tonight. Who hit the home runs? That's up to the audience. So, okay, that was for you, Planet Peterson. Now we got to get a question for Brian, who's here on Planet Earth tonight. And so let's... Oh, I had one. Here we go. Okay. Liam B. Question for Brian. If plate tectonics are false, how are there mountains?
That's because during the hydroplate, the water was gushing up with such tremendous force, and these two cliffs 60 miles high were crumbling into the forest, shooting them out, and the cliffs got wider and wider and wider. And then pretty soon there's nothing pushing down on the Atlantic Ocean and the mantle, and it bulges. So now you got North America and South America sliding to the west, and you got Africa and Europe sliding to the east, and they keep going until they meet resistance, and then they buckle up. And that's why the mountain ranges are pretty much parallel to the mid-oceanic ridge and mid-Atlantic ridge. And that's how we got the mountains. And then the mountains sink down and some has to rise up, and that's how we got the plateaus.
Thank you, Brian. Eric, floor is yours.
I shared my screen. Can we show that for a second?
Yes. There you go.
So what we find is when we mapped the ocean floor, we found all these mid-ocean ridges, and we call these divergent plate boundaries. And the idea is that over vast stretches of time, the continents have moved into their current positions. The continental puzzle works with that extremely well. The mid-ocean ridge works with that extremely well. Brian, I think what you need to reckon with is, why on earth is it that the radiometric dating of the ocean floor perfectly mirrors what you would expect? It's youngest at the mid-ocean ridge, and uniformly in both ways gets progressively older as you go away from it. That absolutely confirms the traditional secular narrative about plate tectonics being a long and drawn out process. So that'll be it.
Oh, keep the picture up there if you would. If you want to keep your picture up.
Because, I can do that.
Yeah. Because that picture, they use that Astro Alexandra. She did a thing on what they found on Bannu, and she used that picture, and she said that serpentine comes when the mantle touches the water, and they found that in Bannu. And she's thinking there's got to be this big water planet that used to be floating around. And she's just a victim of our government education, because she won't even consider that the water planet is Earth. And so, yeah, she used that picture and it validates the hydroplate, because how else does it get out there? And
Brian, if you could. Why on earth does the radiometric dating follow this precise pattern and give you dates of hundreds of millions of years?
Well, why on earth does radiometric dating tell us that Mount St. Helens lava is 340,000 to 2.8 million
years
old?
That's within the acceptable range of error.
Yeah, but it should be 10 years old. They took it from the lava.
You don't understand what a range of error means then.
Well, if that's your test... Something that's 10 years old and it shows up as 340,000 to 2.8 million is acceptable to you?
Because that's the range of error. It's an inappropriate test. We've dated the volcanic ash at Pompeii, and we get the exact right number using different techniques.
They date them a whole lot other places and get the wild numbers, and we're supposed to expect...
Because there's a range of error.
Yeah.
If your measuring tool measures in increments of billions of years, and the error rate for that is 0.0001%, then that means the age can fluctuate by 125,000 years. So if you date something that formed yesterday, the range of answers you're going to get is going to be within 125,000 years. But that's not the appropriate way to do the dating technique. Because again, that's a process that is 99.9% accurate, because the error range is only 0.001%. Well, it's 0.001, not 0.001%. But that doesn't, like, if you can't see that, then I don't really know what to tell you. You just got to look at.
Well, one experiment is worth 1,000 expert opinions. So when they misstated that, I mean, so that means they could be wrong on the age of the earth then. You know, they could be wrong on a lot of things.
No, there's a range of error, but things that measuring systems that work in increments of billions of years will have, can have an error range of maybe a million years, and a million's a big number, but it's only 1/1000th of a billion. So it's 99.99% accurate.
Yeah, I've got the ranges. I've got the data, and it fits within the range. I mean, the ranges aren't that big. I don't know if I can find it, but I might not be able to find it. But yeah, the range, it shouldn't, you know, 10-year-old lava. And so there, we're going to say that's millions of years old.
No,
also the
acceptable error range is going to be a big number because potassium 40 has a half-life of 1.25 billion years. So if it's 99.9% accurate, that means the fluctuations in the measure, the error range or whatever we call that within the measurement is going to give you these huge numbers. So something that formed yesterday can look like it's thousands of years old. You need a different and a proper dating technique for doing that. I'm just saying the same thing over and over again, but this just comes down to margin of error and inappropriately using the margin of error.
Yeah, I can't find that right now. Oh, no, I don't. I don't have that. But yeah, they misstated the KBS Tuff that was 220 million years old, and then they found a skull on it. And it's like, oh, we got to fix the date on that. And yeah, I've got this like Mount St. and Hawaii, they misstated that too. It came up to 1.6 million years, and it should only have been a couple hundred years, and the margin of error is 160,000. And they also did Mount Etna in Sicily, and that was 25,000 years. It shouldn't have been, and that was a 8,000-year range. And there was another ones that go on, but that's the detail part.
I mean, you're just cherry-picking studies because we've been able to cross-correlate radiometric dating with Vesuvius or Pompeii, and we get the correct date.
Well,
so maybe it is successful.
Maybe you're the one that's cherry-picking because I found the Mount St. Helens one. And the whole rock specimen was 350,000 years with a margin of error of 0.05 million years. And Feldspar was 340,000 years with a plus or minus of 6,000. And then the Amphibole was 900,000 and with a plus or minus of 200,000. And the Pyrex one was 1.7 million with a error of 300,000. And the Pyrex one, another one, was 2.8 million. With an error rate of 600,000. So they're way outside their error rates. So this experiment proved that
table
doesn't
say what you're saying.
Sure it does.
No, you're telling me how old it is. Because you don't have what the purported actual age of these things is up there anywhere.
Well, yeah, I could share it to the screen if you want to look at it.
I can say I don't like, we have to answer people's questions.
Okay. All right.
You know,
Yeah.
I do want to talk about it, but at the same time.
Yeah, that's fair. Yep, you're right. Yeah, you're right. Give the people
right there is a good place to wrap up that question. Now we got a mini great radiometric dating debate. So you guys are giving it's been a general night tonight, right? The proper perspective of the past, present, and future. And you gentlemen have literally discussed just about everything related to origins, ancestry, creation, evolution. So, okay, next one for Planet Peterson comes in from Brad. Ask Peterson to present the evidence for the causal testability that proves random mutation is the means of taxonomic emergence.
Ask Peterson to present the evidence for the causal testability that proves, the fossil record. Like the number of Darwin predicted that an Archaeopteryx organism should be found. And then it was found like a year after he published on The Origin of Species. Neil Shubin predicted Tiktaalik. And then they found it exactly where they thought that they would find it. The transitional forms we have for whales and horses and the different hominids and what else? What was the other one I had up there? like tetrapods. and Brontotheres in Badlands National Park in South Dakota. Like, we have countless of these. So, yeah, like, it's known. It's been tested. It's been confirmed over and over again.
Thank you, Eric. Brian, any thoughts?
Actually, it's been falsified. Dr. Carl Werner, he falsified evolution, and actually his theory, yeah. he wanted to prove evolution. And so he came up with a theory. Well, you don't prove things, you falsify them. And he said, if evolution is false, we should find the modern animals in the fossil record because they didn't change. They didn't evolve. And that's what he found. He's got a book called Living Fossils, and it's just full of living fossils. And the weird thing is they look identical, but scientists think they're different genus and different species, apparently because they're blinded by their millions of years thing. And then he also did another one, and he found 150 frauds in human evolution. And yeah, it's very interesting. And he says you can't find this in the science journals. You have to go and interview them and take pictures of them yourself. And he's got three volumes of this. And so people do cherry pick. And if you want your grant renewed, you're going to find the evidence that they want you to find, or you're not going to get your grant renewed. And so, and that happens in medicine. It happens a lot of places. And that's not science, but that is the reality of the situation.
Thank you, Brian. Eric, you get the last word on this one. Go ahead.
None of those fossils have had their DNA analyzed. So to say that they're the same thing is literally false. Well, it's not literally false. It's not known.
Thank you, Eric. Okay, next one for Brian Lauer, Sydney Raptor. His question is this: what is Brian's citation for comets and asteroids being from Earth?
Accurate predictions. People with this model make accurate predictions on what you can check out Kevin Lee. He's got these, go out into TCCSA, they got a YouTube channel, or just any of Kevin Lee's talks. I think he was at the Great Plains Forum or something. He stood face to face with a NASA scientist and said, you're going to find stuff from the Earth and the comet. And the NASA scientist, no, we'll find stuff from the outer solar system. You know, that's where the Oort cloud is. And he was stunned to find stuff from the inner solar system. And some of the stuff could only be made in scalding hot water, like cubanite. Where do you get scalding hot water? And it fit the hydroplate perfectly. And then he emailed the same guy and he said, hey, if you try to redirect an asteroid, and it'll work if it's a solid rock, but it'll fail if it's a bunch of loosely held boulders. And guess what? It was a bunch of loosely held boulders, which is exactly what the hydroplate would predict. And then also what they're discovering, what they're bringing back from the comets, and what there's, it just perfectly comes from Earth. And yet they're blinded by their blind chance perspective, and they just can't connect the dots. And we want all the voices allowed in the science room. I don't think they should be kicked to the curb, especially if a theory is making accurate predictions. I am just appalled at the lack of curiosity in our science departments at St. Cloud State and in our college and in our high schools. They just, they only think one way. It's like this is the only way to think, and they can't think a different way. And that's really hurting science in a lot of big ways.
Thank you, Brian. Eric, floor is yours.
I mean, we've heard hydroplate described a million times, and I don't want to prolong the discussion here for an explanation, but we've never had an explanation of actually what it is. And this thing that it's making accurate predictions, we would need to see when and where did they make the prediction for this? What year or whatever was it? And then when did we find this out? Because I see a lot of people they take the conclusions we have and we say, yeah, that was, we predicted that. When it's like, no, you took the data we had and then you built a model and retrofit your conclusion in with it. But even if they have some predictions, that's cool. But you need to, if it doesn't preclude another explanation, then it hasn't confirmed itself or falsified something else either.
Thank you, Eric. Brian, you get the last word on this one.
Yeah, you can check out Calvary Port Orchard, calvarypo.org or something like that. That's where he's the pastor, and he also gives these talks, and I've got a whole hydroplate channel just specifically on this, and I show the emails. You can check the dates, you can see the evidence, and then you conclude for yourself. This is making accurate predictions. It's hitting the ball out of the park, and the scientists, because they're so blinded by their blind chance perspective, they just won't allow another perspective in the door. It's really hurting science. And so then NASA, they want to take photographs of these things impacting the asteroids, and they get all this stuff flying up and it blinds the camera. So they waste, I don't know how many hundreds of millions of dollars because it was too close because of all the dust. They should have had it wait and they didn't. But listen, Pastor Kevin Lee, Port Orchard, Washington, I believe, calvarypo.org. You can see these things. It's his emails. And he stood face to face. And it's just stunning. And they had Walt Brown, he's the guy who figured out the theory, have him make predictions before they found out what they found. And he was right. He was right. And yet they get kicked to the curb.
Thank you, Brian. Okay, we'll do two more questions. One more for the each of you. Planet Peterson, I can already tell you are going to love this one from Jeffrey Luciana. Question for Peterson. Can you tell us what happened between 401 million and 400 million years ago? I mean, it's only a million years. What are your thoughts, Eric?
I could look up, I could search and find out what we know about a particular part in the world from precisely these dates. I don't have any of that off the top of my head. But I mean, what is this supposed to prove? I mean, I'll reach across the aisle here, Brian. I would assume Brian also thinks, what on earth would this prove? In the Bible, you know, the Bible records many, many stories, but it's not a chronological history of from 6,000 years ago to the time Jesus died. There's literally hundreds and hundreds of years of gaps in there. So therefore, the Bible's false. Therefore, like what? This is just stupid.
I told you, you're going to love this question, Planet Peterson. Brian, what are your thoughts?
Well, I'm glad. It's a difficult question. I don't know really how to answer it, but I think the 400 million years is a belief system. And I think that it's got a lot of assumptions with it, and even with the radiometric dating. And I would like to actually thank Jeffrey, too, for staying to the end, and anybody else who is still here.
People are enjoying it. You guys are good sports. You know, you guys came in full of energy, came in swinging, held each other's feet to the fire, and you're both smiling for the most part, and you both look pretty content after almost a few hours. So thanks for being good sports and having thick skin. That's what we need in debates, right? So, okay. Peterson, you get the last word if you'd like it. Go ahead.
I don't think I can. I mean, Brian didn't say anything to like rebut or respond to, really. And I already told you my thoughts on the question here. So,
okay, no worries. Donzo has a question for Brian. How can we tell what is design and what is not? Do you have examples of each?
Very good.
Well, yeah. If there's a purpose for it, it was designed like an arrowhead that looks different than a normal rock that's found in nature. And you could even go one step farther if there's multiple parts working together. Like, look at the engine of your car. Did that just come about by chance? No. That's multiple parts working together with precision timing for a purpose. And guess what? Multiple parts working together with precision timing for a purpose. If our engine couldn't evolve, there's no way our bodies could evolve because we're a gazillion times more complicated than an engine with a whole bunch of chicken and egg problems. It had to be fully formed, fully functional, right from the get-go, or we're dead.
Thank you, Brian. Planet Peterson, anything you want to add to that?
I mean, Brian, I don't think you actually answered the question because you said, let me give you an example of something we know is designed. I know that thing is designed. And then you said, therefore, a human is designed. So I guess, like, and you said, well, the test would be it has a purpose. So I guess I would just slightly modify the question, throw it back to you. What evidence that the universe is designed do you see?
The perfectly balanced, the finely tuned The finely tuned universe, all these the cosmological constants that have to be just perfect. And for us to have that, they have to posit a multiverse. You know, the only way we got to be in the perfect universe is if there's an infinite number of other universes, and then we just happen to be in the right one. And so there's a lot of rescuing devices. And then going back to his question, I think I did answer it. An arrowhead has a purpose. You can see this as an arrowhead. And a regular rock, it just is laying there. You can tell if something was designed, if it's been modified. And then especially, you know, like Mount Rushmore. You know, it'd be absurd to think that George Washington's face formed on that mountain by chance.
Yeah, but Brian, nobody disagrees that a human made Mount Rushmore. We know that.
Right.
I don't think that the planet Saturn was designed.
Can I finish my point before you? Okay, it'd be absurd.
I'm just trying to get you more on topic.
Okay, it would be absurd to think what George Washington's face got there by natural processes. And yet we're supposed to believe that George Washington himself got there by natural processes. I mean, that's just that takes way more faith than I got. I just can't believe that.
Gentlemen, that wraps up our audience Q&A and the debate itself. Again, a solid, energetic, engaging debate. Brian Lauer and Planet Peterson, I do appreciate you both being willing to join us for a few hours on this Saturday night debating the question, what is the proper perspective of the past, present, and future? Let's get some final words and final thoughts. Again, I appreciate you guys doing this. That includes giving us the time to prep and study for debates like this, and also the time you give for the debate itself. Brian, let's start with you. Thanks so much for doing this. Final words, final thoughts.
Well, I think thank you, Donnie, for putting this together. And thank you, Eric, for stepping up to the microphone. I think it's good for us to listen to people who are outside of our echo chambers. And so I appreciate the insights that you've had. And I just want to apologize to everybody in the audience. My timer went off, so that kind of threw me off. And then my rebuttal thing was gone, so I had to throw that together on the fly. So I apologize for that. But again, I think this is what we need. We need a free flow of ideas so that all the ideas can be critiqued. And in this idea of censoring ideas and keeping them out of the mainstream and not allowing those ideas, I think that's a real science stopper. And then again, the belief systems, you know, if we're just mutated animals, what's wrong with killing animals? And I think that's the wrong perspective. I think there's a better perspective that leads to a lot better place.
Thank you very much, Brian, for those final words, final thoughts. Again, for those in the audience, if you like what you're seeing and you've enjoyed what you've seen from Brian Lauer here, do check out his YouTube channel and also his website, Solidify Your Faith. Eric Peterson from Planet Peterson, thank you as well for your time and for engaging in tonight's event. Let's hand it to you for some final words, final thoughts.
Sure. I mean, I'm not going to say too much because I kind of just echo at least the first part of what Brian was saying. I'm glad we do this kind of thing. And it is important. So like, thanks for being here. And it was cool. It was heated, but you know, no animosity or anything like that. The one thing I want to do actually is I had a friend that had a question for Brian, but they wouldn't be able to watch the stream because they were going to be traveling. And so they weren't able to like super chat their question, but it's a really short one. Brian, is it cool if I just ask you the question quick?
Yeah, that's fine. Yeah.
They wanted to know, do you still actually think, and are you going to keep saying that the Big Bang is when nothing turned into the universe? Because they think that's really uncharitable and not accurate.
Yeah. Yeah. Where did the matter come from? It can't be.
We don't know, but we don't say that it came from nothing. So I had this same sentiment. I don't get why you say that. It's a really bizarre, cheap attack, I think.
That's what Lawrence Krauss said. It came from nothing. The universe.
Have you read
his
book? Because he doesn't say that it's literally nothing.
Well, yeah, then it's not nothing. He changed the definition of nothing. And then before that, you had the guy in the wheelchair. He said the universe from gravity. You know, it's
gravity's not nothing.
Gravity.
Gravity's not nothing. So are you you're going to continue saying that people like me believe that nothing turned into the universe, even though I'm sitting here telling you that we don't think that?
Well, what did turn into the universe then?
We don't know. That's not that's not the claim that it was nothing.
So you don't know if nothing turned into it, and you don't know if God did it. So you really can't.
I'm not saying that. Yeah, but you're putting words into my mouth. Do you not see that?
Well, if you don't know how you did how it happened, how do you know God didn't do it?
I don't know that. I'm agnostic, but you don't have evidence for it.
There we go.
But the question is, are you going to keep telling people that atheists believe nothing turned into something? Because that's just such a...
Well, show me how I'm wrong.
I literally have told you several times.
Well, no, you say you don't know how, where it came from. Well, show me what it did come from. If it wasn't nothing,
I had to ask. We'll have to move on here. I think everybody gets it. I had to ask you three times that if I don't know, does that mean that I claim it came from nothing? And you refused to answer it. So I think you've kind of been caught here in that. But anyways.
Well, not knowing doesn't prove that it didn't come from nothing or that it didn't come from God.
That's not it. Saying I don't know isn't an endorsement. I can't say it any more clearly than that. So I really hope you stop strawmanning our position like that in the future.
Well, what is your position? What did the universe come from?
I've told you so many times I don't know.
Okay, and that so includes, you don't know what happened.
And that includes that the universe came from anything. There's no logical problem with an eternal universe.
If you don't know that it didn't come from nothing, how can you say that I'm wrong?
You're putting words in my mouth, Brian.
Why should I stop saying it then? If you can't prove me wrong.
Why should you stop lying about what I believe? That's well, you're actually asking me that?
How is it a lie if you can't prove that it didn't come from
Brian,
nothing?
Brian, do I believe that the universe came from nothing?
Well, Lawrence Krauss does, but then he changed the
definition.
You
are so incapable of engaging in good faith with this. Do I believe that?
Well, if I'm wrong, prove it. I don't know is not proof.
Do I believe that the universe came from nothing?
Apparently not.
Okay. So
but you don't know what it
then
did
it's
come from.
Wrong for you to go around saying that's what I believe because it's a lie and you're putting words into my mouth. That's the answer
well,
to your question.
You
why should
that.
I
it's
stop doing it? Why should Brian Lauer stop lying? I would hope that Brian Lauer doesn't want to be a liar. But if you're going to peddle this nonsense, then I guess maybe that's your only choice. And Lawrence Krauss doesn't believe it either. He wrote a clickbaity title book, and he said that it's not literally nothing. It could be gravity, which is what I mean by nothing.
He's got these three flavors of nothing. He changes the meaning of a term. So nothing doesn't mean nothing. Talk about being underhanded. How about that?
Brian, Eric.
I was just going to say, it's a cheap marketing trick. Like,
well, yeah,
people are trying
it sure
to make
is.
Money.
It sure is. That's like when, yeah, I'll leave it at that.
Post-debate, post-credit scene, a debate about whether or not the universe came from nothing. And gentlemen, you gave us one to remember tonight. That is the proper perspective of the past, present, and future between Brian Lauer from Solidify Your Faith and Eric Peterson over at Planet Peterson. Gentlemen, we are going to wrap things up now for tonight. To the audience, thank you so much for tuning in. I hope you had as much fun as I did. And thank you for the feedback, the interaction, and the questions for our awesome guests tonight. With that, thanks again for tuning in. And Standing for Truth is out.